Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
I'm Chase Rolfson with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Buckman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is the podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
It's really, really not that good.
Working class.
Guys, we're going to get into the podcast here in just a bit. Want to get some things out of the way. Working Class Bow Hunter is always brought to you by Scent Crusher, the leading company in ozone technology.
We've done this 312 times and watched you stumble through it.
I'm like, oh my god, dude, you put me on the spot.
Hey, we have a guest in studio.
We do.
Let's be courteous here. Podcast presented by Scent Crusher, HHA Sports. See, I have a cheat sheet here. North American Whitetail Championship. Also, WCB 15. Save yourself some money. HHA Sports. North American Whitetail Championship. If you want to enter on that, you get a free Tacticam package of goodies. WCB 25. Elite Archery. And big time. Also, Combination Boom. Creative. That was simple and quick, but...
But somehow I managed to mess it up.
Story I just life. Did it better than you, that's all.
Oh, so I didn't mess up, you just did it better. All
what's
right,
new?
I appreciate that.
What's new?
You messed up for what? How you should have performed, probably, for the first sponsor, the number one sponsor that we plug every time.
My bad. I was waiting on you, I apologize, no excuses.
Well, let's get to our guest, then a veteran shout-out.
We should.
We have Johnny Utah, a.k.a. Well, Johnny Mulligan, a.k.a. Johnny Utah. I know you as Johnny Utah because that's where I see your name all the time on Instagram.
No, I get every once in a while I even get the emails, like the the Ponzi schemes or something. You know, your great uncle passed away and you're the heir to the throne in, like, Dubai or whatever. And
awesome.
You know, it's always addressed to Mr. Utah, and I'm like, yeah, apparently that's not
That's kind of awesome. Well, it's got a ring. And then when I first met you, I had that, like, oh, Johnny Utah. And then I was like, I don't wonder why.
That's how we got to introduce him as. Was in Utah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I guess we're starting there. But you got a veteran shout-out?
I do, actually. This vet shout-out is going to be sent in from a good buddy of ours, Kevin Dye. The veteran's name is Alan, and I don't want to butcher his name, but Van Tetten. Van Tetten. Looks weird. He was a Marine. Kevin sent this in. He said, I'm asking you guys to shout out my former boss, Al. He recently passed away from a motorcycle accident. He was a sniper in the Marine Corps and a member of the Legacy Vet Motorcycle Club. And he was also an excellent mechanic. And he was a pretty straight-up boss. Unfortunately, he's not going to be able to hear this, but, you know, the guy put the ultimate sacrifice out there, signed that blank check, and he just wanted to thank him for all the freedoms that all our servicemen and women can put first. And unfortunately, Al did recently pass away, so we thank him for his service, and we appreciate the passing of such a good man. But, you know, wherever you are right now, thank you for the freedoms you provided while you were still around. You thought about us before you thought of yourself, so we appreciate that dearly.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And thanks, Kevin, for submitting that.
Yes, sir.
I think we're ready to rock, man. Thanks for coming to the show. Yeah. Thanks for coming to the studio. We're already sweating.
Yeah.
We need to add that it's 95 degrees outside right now.
I'm wearing shorts, it's warm. I should not be.
Yeah, we need to like turn the crank the volume on that fan once, Tank. Hit that button. This is a working class bow hunter studio. We're going to see if that starts picking up on the mic. We'll just cut it down.
Dude, I'm pretty good right now.
I feel that already.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah. I just felt that.
That's my heavy
breathing. I don't think anyone's going to feel it.
That's awesome. So, yeah, I mean, you're not that far from us.
No.
But you made a trip to Mr. DeQuisto's.
Yeah.
And then just hit us on the way back, and it worked out.
Yeah, worked out perfect, man. Kind of makes I actually went to kind of the farthest distance, and now I'm kind of working my way back, to, you know, back home.
Right,
giant loop for you.
Yeah, big loop.
There you go.
Yeah, but it works out. It's good. I wanted to come up here, and you know, once I got introduced to you guys, I'm like, I like these guys. These are rad. These are my people. You know what I mean?
Well, we were gonna podcast over the phone. You're like, dude, I'll just come there.
Yeah,
like it'll be way better.
Oh,
like,
it always is.
Yeah, I agree because it's just better in person. Uh-huh. We get to hang out longer before and after the show. Yep. It just makes for a better time.
Yep.
And I wish we had the money to fly people in. I'm like, oh, dude, you know what I mean? Awesome. That would be the dream, right? To have everyone that you've ever had on the phone. Just,
oh yeah.
Just fly in next week, like Rogan or something. Yeah. You know?
We're gonna buy an airplane someday. Yeah.
We're gonna shoot that techno archery screen.
Oh, see, that's what I want to do, except we'll be the guys that just have Bush Light around.
Yeah.
You know?
And we're shooting a hay bale outside.
That's right.
I don't think they sell Bush Light in California. Maybe they do.
I don't know.
I'm down to it, man. You can't get it in Missouri some places.
Yep. Dude, that's rough. You can't get it in Indiana.
Dude, I was at a wedding in St. Louis, and I was like, hey, you got Bush Light? They're like, we got Bud Light. I'm like, Bush Light? What are you from, Iowa? Maybe.
Might be.
Well, close enough.
Yeah. Hell, we were in Indianapolis for ATA a couple years ago. Yep. We tried to order Bush Light at the bar. They're like,
pfft. They looked at us like they never even heard what it was.
Like, are you white trash? Like, yeah, I am.
Yeah, then we got to Ohio. Yes. You can kind of get Bush Light there, but they're always shoving this Yingling bullshit down.
Hey, Pete, Yingling's on top. I know, Johnny, you have shitty internet. Well, you got internet now.
Now I do, yeah.
They are supporting Trump, so everyone's freaking out about Yingling now.
Ooh, that's a bold move.
Bold.
Very bold. There's a landscape show that I do down in Louisville, you know, same place that we, you know, go to a lot for the ATAs. But I got invited to this private open bar deal at PBR. And I go in there and the guy's like, it's open bar. So I'm like, bourbon. And he goes, no, it's like beer open bar, dude. So I said, all right, give me a Bush Light. And he kind of looks at me and kind of he sighs or whatever.
They have it, though.
And then he goes under the bar,
yep.
Opens up one of the little like dorm refrigerators, and he gives me a silo.
Yep.
Cracks it open, hands it to me. So then I go back to the bar, you know, table that I was sitting at with my friends, and they're like, dude, that is straight up gangster. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And they're like, you went outside across the street to CVS, bought a silo, and brought it back into PBR. I'm like, no, that's what they gave me at the bar.
This
like,
is the hidden kit.
Yeah.
This is the hidden kit. That's awesome.
Once so. Worked out pretty good.
That's good. Yeah. I don't know what the deal with that. The Yingling stuff is getting shoved down our throat, but, you know, Bush Light is, Bush Light's all right with me.
It is. You know,
it's a great.
I messed up. I had something unplugged. I plugged it in. It stopped our recording. We're talking about you going to CVS and getting a Bush Light.
Oh, catch
you. We're good on video. This will just be a little cutout. We're catching up. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, you get the damn.
This edit that working video. Class again, yet again. We have a guest in studio, so we're fucking up.
Why not? If he was on the phone, everything would be perfect, but since you're here.
Right.
Carry on. I don't know where you guys were at. I spaced out for a second.
No, you were at a bar in Iowa. The first bar you went to.
Yeah, bar in Iowa. So I go in and I say, you know, what bourbons do you have? And she's like, well, we have Jim Beam. And I said, no, I said bourbon. And she goes, well, that's bourbon. And I went, no, sweetheart, that's whiskey. And so she goes, what's the difference? And I said, I'm from Kentucky, and that's the difference. Do you have any bourbon? And she goes, you're not from around here. And I said, No, I'm not. And she's like, well, this is just kind of a beer joint. So canned beer is your choices. I'm like, Bush Light. You know what I mean?
Oh, I like when you went to the open bar, how you were like bourbon, and then you went from the top to just back down.
Right down to the college fridge in the bottom.
It was like start at Pappy Van Winkle and then finish up at Bush Light.
You're our kind of people, man.
Hey,
kind of
hey, check this out. I'm a rye whiskey guy.
Okay. Okay.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
I'm not a whiskey guy.
Not Pendleton. Alberta Rye. I like.
Yeah.
A lot.
And I butcher it, and I should do better. Like, is it Bullet Bourbon or Bullet or Boulet?
I think it's Bullet. Yeah.
Bullet.
That's what I've heard.
I was in a tiny little bar back home. I'm sorry, bar carry out liquor store, and this guy comes in real nonchalant, and he's asking a lot of questions about like, so do you sell much rye whiskey here? And he's talking to the guy, and we kind of converse back and forth, and the guy gets ready to leave. He's like, well, I appreciate your all's time. And I'm thinking, this is really kind of weird. You know, I'm hanging out with my buddy that owns this liquor store, and I'm like, random people just walk in and ask you how much bourbon you sell or whiskey or whatever.
Right.
And I said, hey, partner. And now this is when I was still back in my old career. And so I held out my hand. I said, I didn't catch your name. I thought, maybe this guy's casing the joint, right?
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, I didn't catch your name. He's like, Jim Boulet. Master Brewer Jim Boulet, like Bullet Bourbon, that's you. So now at home I have a bottle that he took a Sharpie and he signed and he wrote the coolest cop I ever met.
Now that's a perfect segue into who you are. So give us the background on you, what you do, where you came from, and then we'll get into the story
on Johnny Utah.
Oh, by the way, this is episode 312 with Johnny Utah, in case you didn't pick that one up.
312.
We're at 1600 Buckslayer Place, beautiful Buckatorium, lovely Sherrard, Illinois. Continue.
We haven't had someone this cool in the studio since Cody DeQuisto, so our apologies.
Hey, we're not used to getting cool guy'd a whole lot. You see, like, look at this crew. We don't hang out with cool people a lot.
We're all giddy and shit.
That was 12 episodes ago, so we're getting a little rusty, so apologize on that.
As I'm, like, sending Kurt messages, like, once a week, I'm like, hey, dude, can I please come on the podcast?
Kurt, you know, Steve's really cool. Can I sit next to him when I'm on the show? Dude, you for sure can.
Tell him not to shower before he gets on, which, by the way, if I stink, man, I took a quick shower, and I might not have washed so well. So.
Hey, it's all good. It's all right. Working class.
You got to work through us and Steve when we get off topic, so give us your story.
Yeah, okay. Let's hear Johnny Utah.
So, grew up in Lexington, Kentucky, Jesmond County, Kentucky. It's basically dead center, central Kentucky, and did a little farming, you know, with the old man and stuff, and didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up, but I knew I didn't want to be a plumber and take over the family business.
Right.
Because my dad now, he just, you know, like typical father-son, battled. So I ended up going to school for horticulture, and that's what I wanted to do was dirt, soil, grass, trees. Like, that was kind of my thing, landscaping. And so I got into doing that and then very quickly got burned out.
Yeah.
One of my neighbors back in Lexington after college, he was an undercover narc guy with Lexington Metro, and he just had, like, cool stories, like, all the time. And he's like, dude, he's like, you never talk about your job. I'm like, I planted 27 white pines today. So tell me about kicking in that door and buying a kilo.
Right. Yeah, dude. Oh, man, the fern tree pulled out an AK. It was nuts.
Yeah. I mean, he just had, like, movie stories, you know. And so it was pretty awesome. So very, you know, like, naive of me, I'm like, I want to go do that because – that's what I see on TV. So that's what must all policing must be like. It's just running around like cops and robbers, you know, shooting people, right? So I remember I came home one day and I told my wife, I said, hey, I'm gonna go be a cop.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, oh, I've got news for you too. I'm like, oh, what's that? And she's like, I'm pregnant with number one.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh, wow, we got a lot of changes going on. So
that's awesome.
I didn't know that policing was something I was gonna do forever. To be totally honest, I thought I was going to do it for like 2 or 3 years because I do like to learn new stuff.
Sure.
And I'm like, man, think of all the training and the tactics and the driving and just learning legal and law. Like, that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought I was going to do.
Like, just get in, have the experiences, and get out?
Yeah, literally, I wanted to do it for like 2 or 3 years.
That's a cool mindset. Yeah, that's not a common mindset.
No, it's not at all. No, and
it's not common. Yeah, because people are scared to do that type of shit, you know? Like,
yeah.
To think like, oh, I'm just going to do that for a couple years and then I'll go do whatever after that.
The mindset is, I am going to have this job till I retire.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's an American mindset.
Do you read a lot then?
No, I'm actually I'm
illiterate.
I'm like, so what? Yeah.
Books give me anger issues. Yeah. That's why I got kicked off of police.
Yes, I'm so.
I read a guy's rights and beat him.
I look at magazines and I start at the back of a magazine for whatever reason, and I always flip from the back to the front and I just look at pictures.
Are you Hebrew?
No, okay. I don't know.
That's how you read.
Yeah. Yep.
Got that. Yeah. Thank
okay.
You.
I'm glad you got that.
Yep.
I had no idea what the hell you're talking about.
But so I get into police work, and I hadn't been in it very long at all. And a position comes open. There's a federally funded drug task force that was operating in Northern Kentucky, Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, that would be so awesome. Like, that's why I got into this job. Right. So I'm still technically in my training phase, and the field training officer is like, hey, dude, you've got to make a couple of stops every night. I got to evaluate you. So I pull over this cat, and you just get that feeling something's not right. Fast forward about 30 minutes later, the dog's barking, and there's 312 pounds of marijuana in the car. 312? 312.
How much do you weigh, Steve?
235 right now.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, it puts it in perspective.
So copious amounts, you know?
So more than Steve.
Yeah.
And so there's a fat shit ton of marijuana back there.
Like, ridiculous amount. And so it just so happened that when that came up, like 2 weeks later is when they posted the position that they were accepting applications for this thing. And I thought, like, how can they tell me no? Like, I'm coming off a record bus, like the county record, you know? Uh-huh. I ended up getting the spot and went into this undercover unit. And I'm like, now this is cool. Now I could probably ride out my career doing this. Yeah, you know what I mean? Every day, you know, fake name, using informants, you know.
No way, man.
Did you, like, grow your hair out and get a long beard and all the crazy shit?
Did you have tattoos then?
I had a couple. I had, like, two or three.
Because those would probably would have helped you.
Yeah, yeah. And it helped me. And I did get a lot more while I was in the unit. But I remember the first day I walked into the unit, and the director's like, hey, just so we're clear, we buy meth and heroin here. We don't buy steroids. So
it's like, hey, fatten up.
Yeah.
Tight shirt.
Well, I basically like literally lived off of like a bag of Funyuns and like a Pepsi.
Dude,
was
you
my
had
daily
to write,
intake.
Did you write that off as a tax write off? Because that's part of your uniform.
It was part of the uniform. I'd look the part.
You had to get out of shape to fit in?
Yeah. Yeah. So I ended up dropping like 35 pounds, 40 pounds while I was in the unit, you know, and just kind of playing the part. Ton of fun. The training was awesome. Got to meet a lot of good dudes. You know, got to work with some FBI guys, some DEA guys, ATF guys and stuff. Yeah. And that was like, again, that kind of goes back to why I got into it. I'm like, I want to learn all this cool stuff. Right.
Yeah, for sure.
And it was super fun. But my time was up there. I ended up going back to the road and then started landscaping again on the side. Which then, fast forward a few years, and I'm at the Ohio Deer and Turkey Show, and I come across Wicked Tree Gear. And at that time, Todd Prevance was the sole owner, and he had a handsaw. That's all he had. And I came up to him, and I'm like, dude, this is a landscape saw. He's like, landscape? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, he's like, no, man, this is for hunters. I'm like, no, this is for landscapers. You know, this is like farmers, you know, any kind of ag guys. So I bought a couple. And, you know, I've always been an entrepreneur and the wheels are turning, you know, and within 24 hours, I'm reaching out to him and I'm like, hey, you need me to sell saws for you. He's like, yeah, or whatever. So I buy like 50 saws. I sell them in like 2 days.
Uh-huh.
I buy 100 more. I sell those like in a week. And then I buy like 200 more. And he's like, okay, what in the hell are you doing? You
know, he's like, I might need you.
Where in the hell are these saws
Maybe
going?
Maybe I need you.
You're my number one sales guy that doesn't work for me.
Exactly. And that's you know, verbatim what he said. So I started seeing kind of the potential in the business. And I said, I got to have more skin in the game. So I want to buy part of the company from you. And at the time, actually, Dan Johnson, Nine Finger Dan, he was actually working with Wicked as well, doing sales. And I said, look, I want to buy part of the company. So Todd and I, we went back and forth. Now, this whole time, I'd also been doing the White Knuckle web show and DVDs. Yeah. And that was my introduction. I didn't even own a video camera. You know, I remember one time Todd's like, hey, do you want to film your hunts? I'm like, yeah, dude, I don't masturbate in front of a mirror. I don't.
Oh,
need,
that's a.
I don't need to see my. You know what I'm saying?
I thought you were cool for a second. My bad. Oh.
and you know, again, if anybody does that, I'm not judging.
I mean, you do what you do. You're right.
That's you can make money on that stuff. I'm just saying.
Right. Right. I just. I'm
Daddy's
like,
got to pay the bills.
I'm like, you know, that's not me. Like when I go hunt, I want to go hunt. You know.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And I don't need to film it. And he's like, just do it. I think you'll enjoy it. And I did film a hunt, and then I ended up shooting like a good buck on the ground. Right. You know, and. And it was
like one of the hardest things to do while self filming, or you know,
yeah. And it was fun because then I got to go home and I'm like, I get to watch it over and over. I'm like, you know, you call your buddies, hey, dude, check this out.
Yeah.
Like, I can tell you about it, or I'll just hit play.
Yeah,
you know,
come over and check this shit out.
Yeah, that's badass.
So then I started like enjoying like the whole storytelling process. So then I really started getting into it, but I wasn't thinking anything about the industry side or working side. I just like telling stories,
which is kind of cool, right? Nowadays, especially like you were just doing it to do it.
Yeah,
it
you were having having fun.
Which we still, that still happens, but it wasn't as, I guess it wasn't as weighing heavy on your thought process on filming your hunts.
Though. Exactly.
It was a home video, essentially.
Yep, yep. So that was fun for me, but I was really, my mind was wicked, you know, business side. Let's grow this company. So I ended up buying part of the company from Todd, and like, I mean, maybe 7 months later, we get a phone call, and I get this call from San Antonio, Texas, and it's like, John Mulligan, this is David Morris down here in South Texas. How you doing? And I'm like, damn it, Mr. Morris. And he's like, you know, and he's like, what? And I said, you sound just like you do on my television set. You know, this might be the real David Morris, you know? Uh-huh. And he's like, are you familiar with me? I'm like, well, yeah. Like, I've watched you and Bill dance like on Sunday and Saturday mornings, like for years, you know? So, we ended up selling Wicked to them, and then I ended up going to work for those guys as their director of marketing of all of their brands, like Tekamani Seed and Glacier Coolers and stuff like that.
It's a pretty sweet deal.
So it was fun.
Shit, yeah.
And I got to continue to design all the Wicked products and, you know, that kind of stuff and do all their R&D.
Perfect mixture, just about, you know.
A little bit of everything.
Yep. So then you start getting into, now I've been filming hunts for a little while. I'd hooked up with Sitka on their deal with their new whitetail pattern, and picked up my first DSLR, was really getting into photography and really enjoying that. And I'm not saying that I got thirsty in that sense, other than, you know, it was just a natural evolution that I wanted to start evolving into like short films and telling stories from a non-traditional sense, you know,
right.
Of like a typical episode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's not the direction Todd wanted to go. So him and I split, and I started Arrow Wild, and he stuck with, you know, White Knuckle.
Yeah.
So at this point, now that you started Arrow Wild, so it's kind of a wild story. Where is your wife at this point with you? Because you're like, hey, look, we got a kid on the way. I want to be a cop. Yeah. Now you're like, yo, I'm an owner of some saws. Now it's like, hey, I want to hunt.
I'm the owner of some saws. And now.
Where is your wife at? Is she your number one supporter?
Totally. Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Well, at this point, she's probably like, this is how you operate.
Yeah. She knows I'm pretty impulsive. Yeah.
Well, with a body like that, I mean, you know, she's got to let anything slide. Just saying.
Yeah. Not with the Funyuns and Pepsi, though.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Did you trim back down by this
once,
point?
Yeah, once.
Oh,
at that
that's
point,
explains
yeah,
it.
Yeah, then I got to, like, go be, you know, try to go be meathead again or, you know, get back in shape. But so during this whole process, she's just kind of like, whoa, you know, and now you add a couple more kids to the mix. Now we have three. And
so can I don't mean to interrupt again, but how long from the undercover narcotic deal where you're eating Funyuns and Pepsi to the web show, you know, with White Knuckle and going down with Tekamani? Like how much time frame is from when you started that to there approximately? Just give the people a little layout on time frame.
So started policing in 2001.
Okay. I was 11.
Undercover 2002, 2003 is when that started. Purchased into Wicked in like 14, like a year after.
Shit. Okay. So you had a career.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a long-haul career.
Yeah, that 2-3-year law enforcement stint, like, became 10 instantly. And, you know, you get into those situations, and you're like, damn it, I said I wasn't going to be here, but, like, for two or three. Now I'm vested into the retirement plan.
Right.
Crap. You know, and whether it be, like, a union job or a factory job or, you know, public service.
Well, then it's just
service.
Hard to leave at that point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
it's hard to leave.
Man.
Benefits and stuff. Yeah.
Yep. and you got kids, and you know what I mean? And then so, now you're starting to plant roots because you've bought a house, you're in a neighborhood, and you know, it's tough on, like, for the kids side.
For
you
sure.
Know, so well. At this point, when you're leaving, did you retire as a cop?
I did 16 years, so I didn't awesome, lose man. All of my money, but I didn't get my full pension either.
Gotcha.
Right.
Yep.
But you have the 3 kids by that point?
Yeah.
Yep. It's a tough decision to make.
Very, very.
Damn, hey, good for you.
Yeah. Big for risk has a big reward, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's I've always been a risk taker. Like, my dad's a big gambler, mm-hmm. and I don't have the stones to pony up the way he gambles.
It's a different type of gamble, right? You know, yep. It's.
And I've always done it more on what I feel strong about. Like, if I have an idea and I'm like, I'm going to make this work.
Yeah, there's an art in confidence, man. Whether yep. you're confident that you'll make that big gamble or you're confident enough that yep. your skill set will get you past where that gamble could.
Yep.
You
yep.
know?
We're the same way, man. My old man's a gambler. And,
yeah.
You know, I was a job at the Arsenal. Great pension, great uh-huh. retirement, and I left.
Yeah. It's nerve-wracking
as hell, but I yep. said, you know what? I'm going to be happier. Fuck it.
Uh-huh. But you also know your own work ethic. It's easier to gamble on something you have confidence in.
That's
like
true.
Pure confidence That's true. In. Because yep. you control your own destiny at that point. So, yep. Yep. But it is scary. Like, most people won't gamble on themselves like that.
No.
And
no,
I yeah. can feel myself wanting to make a gamble. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So it's just like, push yourself for the gamble. Let's go. So
I do have
motivating.
I do have, and you know,
Steve, you haven't really gambled much.
But to touch on the last episode, and then a conversation I had with a very good friend of mine, recently, a couple of years ago, he took a gamble, left a pretty good job, and is pursuing what he loves. He books, like, music events and stuff. He's a comedian. Mm-hmm. Very good guy. And we were having a drink, and he told me, he goes, dude, the best investment you can make is betting on yourself and succeeding. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yep. that shit got into my head, and I had yep. such a great weekend. I'm like, dude, yes, I'm about it. And I had some terrible shit happen, but I'm like, dude, just bet on yourself. I'm like, even if you're losing a little bit, you're still your overall gain's going to be
yep.
beneficial. And I think that's what you did. I mean, yep. you left a job. Yeah, it's dangerous as shit. I mean, mm-hmm. you could get shot by some dude whenever.
Oh,
but,
yeah, dude, that'd be horrifying.
But, you know, you still had...
Dealing with
a
guys
pension.
That look like me and then Steve yeah. all the time.
Yeah, just these fat slobs are like, hey, man, let me get like 3 kilos, bro. Yeah. A couple yeah. 8 balls for my ladies. Yeah. But
if they're looking for a little razzle-dazzle.
Yeah. yeah.
A little pick-me-up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like you took that ultimate risk and you were like, hey, you know what? You're going to pursue a passion. Mm-hmm. Just from how you've talked to us, you've got that mindset. That's a beautiful thing to have. I would like to have it, but I am scared.
That's where you just say
change.
That's where you just like, say you just say fuck it. I'm going with it.
Yeah.
Hey, sometimes you just gotta say what
well,
the fuck.
I mean, and you know, there would be times when I would do. We did 4-10s at the police department. Mm-hmm. So
best schedule ever.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, best it's so good. But you know, like let's take a snapshot of when I was landscaping and I was doing wicked and I was a cop. During the winter, so I did snow removal. So I would clock out from the police department at 5 p.m., get in a plow truck, plow snow all the way through the night, and then would use the police department shower to, like, change the next morning. So there'd be, like, 4 and 5 days where I did not sleep.
Holy shit,
period.
Did you just, like, hallucinate random parts during the day?
Yeah, it was horrible. Like, I had a couple of cop buddies that we would, you know whenever you see the cops window to window in a parking lot?
Oh, yeah.
You do realize they're just bullshitting, right?
Oh, okay. For sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
I roll around with a brother-in-law. He's a county guy, so he goes to every city and stuff and just, like, shooting the breeze. I'm like, hey, shouldn't you guys be out fighting crime? Yeah, hold on. You got to hear what my wife did yesterday.
Yeah, dispatch will call me if there's a problem. But,
no shit.
So we would pull up next to each other window to window, and I'd be like, hey, bro, I need 15. You know, you listen to the radio for me, and I would just.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm like, I have to, like, just.
Well, dude, that's exhausting. Running like that is crazy, man. Yep. It takes a certain breed of human to be able to pull it off. Like, you got to sleep.
It wears on you. But it was in that, like, this is what I have to do to make everything work, to keep everything on track, to try to build up a little equity so I can do more things.
Make ends meet.
Yeah. You know, we got a growing family and, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, there might be a new piece of equipment that I wanted to buy from the landscape.
Yeah. You're trying to feed a hunting passion in the middle of this too.
Yeah. And I'm trying to buy camera equipment and, you know.
Yeah.
And so in 2015, like I said, when Sitka put together that new whitetail pattern, I'm like, man, Sitka does a lot of stuff with marketing and photography.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even own a camera. Like, I've got like a $500 like handy cam that I film my hunts with. That's yep. it.
Yeah.
So like, I go to Best Buy and I buy my first DSLR. And so that was, I mean, that wasn't even, it wasn't even 4 years ago yet. And yeah. I had never owned a camera ever. And I'm like, okay, I just got to get good with this. Well, I didn't know anybody in the hunting industry.
Right.
You know what I mean? So right. I'm like, I guess I'll just teach myself. So went out there and just, you know what I mean? And I'm not a cocky person, but I'm a very confident person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a big difference.
Yeah, Philly. That's why I say in my Tinder profile. Yes, yeah. sir.
doesn't work for him, but
it's, no, it sure as shit doesn't.
He's rolling with it right
Gamble
now.
On yourself, bro.
That's right.
Dude, you don't want to see some of the winnings I've pulled.
You got to go full tilt every once in a while.
They're all losses.
Dude, that's right, man. I'm like, hey, can I just trade this winning in for a buffet ticket? Come on now. This ain't even worth taking home.
Yeah.
Oh, dirty money.
We just threw you off your rock. No. And you're like, yeah, cool.
Yeah, no. But and basically, like I said, it just, I knew what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I knew that, you know, if I wanted to get there, it was going to have to be on me.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I didn't want to depend on anybody. I didn't want to have to owe anybody any favors. And I'm a really big person on, I don't ever want somebody to ever come back and say, well, the reason why he got that is because of me.
Yeah.
You want to earn it on your own.
I
want
to earn it. So, exactly. And I remember that was one of the questions that came up on like the Sitka interview.
Sure.
For these positions is they said, what's more important to you? Like fame or, and I interrupted the guy and I said, respect. And he's like,
it was a big deal.
That really wasn't the second part of the question, but okay.
I think
I know where you're going with this. And I said, look, I could care less about fame, Insta fame, any of that bullshit. Like that stuff comes and goes daily, as we've seen.
Yeah.
Whether you're doing a giveaway or you're the Insta famous person for the day or you killed a lion named Calvin or whatever it is.
Right. Like, I get what you're saying.
But like when you're dead and gone, like I want to leave a legacy.
Yeah, for sure.
I want people to go
blaze a trail, man.
That son of a bitch is one of the hardest working dudes.
You wanted
I've
to
ever
be a
met.
Hunter's hunter.
Yes,
you know, like the people that hunters well, look up to.
And it's
not just
funny
like,
how you say that because like there was some old like the old cops like the Hellfire and Brimstone dudes, you know,
that still and, rock the flat top.
Yeah, and they would tell me like they'd lift up their Ray-Bans as they're smoking like Benson and Hedges, and they'd be like, "You're a cop that was born way after the time. Like
right.
You're a cop's cop. You would have fit in like the 80s wearing like the nylon raid jacket. You know
oh,
what I mean?
Shit.
And I'm like, that meant a lot to me because yeah. I was like,
you're like fuck
yeah.
Yes.
That's when
fuck
men yes. were men. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely.
So. And that's kind of the my people that back when I was at the police department, you know, some of the guys would be like, oh, yeah, you know, John's a cowboy. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? And they said, you don't call for backup, man. You just go handle your shit. You know, and we,
awesome.
And we like if you go to a call, like we're not coming, getting called back. If it's a domestic, it's done. You
yeah,
know, we're not
sure.
coming back 2 days later, 3 days later, whatever.
Yeah.
So I've always kind of been that way, and it's not because, like, I'm snobbish or I'm rude or I don't want to include people.
Yeah.
You can't blame anybody but yourself.
That's Dude, right. you know what? I'm not going to try and compare myself to you at any moment. I guess maybe on a
Better
little...
Better yourself. Have confidence. Try to.
A little. Okay, I'll try. Thank you. On a little spectrum, I feel like I get what you're saying about that. Like, you're a go-getter. You're kind of... There's a little bit of hellfire. Like, somebody fucks with you... All right, you're never going to fuck with me again.
Yep.
And I feel like I have a little bit of that in me. And I feel like at fault, it almost is like people are like, well, Kurt did this. Or I hear this a lot through people, and especially because we're in the public eye with the podcast. Like, mm-hmm. we expose ourselves to like how we conversate.
Sure.
We don't give a fuck what we say usually.
Yeah.
You know, we tell people to fuck off before on the podcast, and it opens up for people to hate on us and scrutiny and all this shit. But I feel because we're that way and we defend ourselves, like if someone says something bad about the show or like something we've done, it's like, well, why are you hating on us? Like all we've ever done has been just who we are and we're showing you
right.
who we are.
Yep.
But I feel like there's because of that, it's backfired. I've been like, oh, well, Kurt does this or doesn't do that or did this. And people are concerned like with what I'm doing, but I'm just trying to like build what we're doing here.
Uh-huh.
And I don't give a fuck what you're doing. And maybe right. I think that kind of relates into a little bit of the hellfire that
yeah.
there's certain people that are, and I'm not saying I'm like the most upfront go-getter, cause I'm not,
mm-hmm.
I want to be, and I try to be, but And you're, I picture you're way above in that spectrum of where I'm looking that I want to be. But I feel like it takes a certain attitude of people and that are more open to being scrutinized. I don't really know where I'm going with this, but you get what I'm saying, kind of. Well, like,
no, totally. Because
I'm on that path.
I mean, for 16 years,
not yeah, years, yeah. But I understand.
But
what
everyone's
you're
on their own path to that,
for right? Sure.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So,
well, I mean, to your all's credit, like you said, I mean, you've never missed a week. 312 podcasts. You kidding me? That's an accomplishment. That takes dedication.
Thanks,
like,
man.
I know that it grinds. You know what I mean? And yeah. You guys are still rocking it. So, and that was the other thing is, kind of how I wanted to come on here was because you guys are so real and you just tell it like it is. And I'm like, man, in this day and age, in this industry, that's refreshing.
And it's weird that I've always struggled with this. Like, we talk about this a lot, me, Eric, and Steve, and our whole behind the scenes guys. It's weird that we're that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's uncommon still. I think it's changing. And I don't know, maybe we had something to do with it, maybe not. Maybe it's just the trend of way things are going and we're riding the wave with it.
Yep.
But it still is weird.
Uh-huh.
It's still super weird, but we're still ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
We're still ourselves.
Well, but this is the majority of people.
That's where I can relate to John here, because my old man always said, I can get you an iron working tomorrow. I go,
yeah.
I don't want you to give me an iron working. I'd rather go take the test myself and get myself in there. Everyone knows you're a badass worker, but I want to prove to them that I can work my ass off and be right there with you.
Yep.
It's a lot of life and hunting have a lot in common, and we haven't talked a lot about hunting, but I'm cool with that. Like, we're going to get to that.
Oh, yeah, we're getting there.
But life and hunting have a lot in common in just mindset alone. Mm-hmm. And physical aspects, for sure. But mindset alone, I think, is a big thing. Like, what do you want to accomplish in life? And then if you want to kill a 125-inch Pope and Young buck, mentally, you have to commit yourself, whether you're hunting public or private or wherever you're at. You have to commit mentally and make those goals and do the work
100%
to get there.
That's the work.
The 125-inch buck in the meat is the paycheck for your hard work.
Absolutely.
So it's how are you going to get there? Maybe this is stereotypical sounding, but there's a breakdown on how you get to your goal in life and hunting. And that's why I think bow hunting, without bow hunting in my life, I don't know. I think I would be kind of a scumbag, to be honest.
I wouldn't have anything to do.
I don't know, because I grew up hunting. Bow hunting kept me disciplined in things. I know, in order to kill a buck every year with my bow, I have to work hard. I have to go. And there's times when I'm laying on the couch and then I'm like, I got to just go. And I'll get up and go. And I feel like if I didn't have that motivator in my life, I don't know if I would be like the dude that has a good career and a good wife and a family if it wasn't for bow hunting.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of discipline that comes from bow hunting.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be disciplined in your pursuit to ultimately get your goal.
Yeah.
And I think there's just a lot of correlations to life in general. And back in 2016, my dad sold his plumbing business and he retired, and he had this big, big retirement party. And it was super rad because my old man loves Hawaiian Caribbean, steel drums and all that kind of crazy shit. Yeah. So like a luau. Yeah. So we're all there hanging out.
And Billy Ocean shows up.
Yeah, exactly.
Playing Caribbean Queen.
Almost.
Yes.
And
so happy.
Everybody's out there, and he has a DJ, and the DJ's like, hey, are you Johnny's son? I said, yeah. And he goes, well, would you like to get up and say a few words about your dad's retirement or whatever? I'm like, yeah, and I've probably had a few too many.
Why not?
To be in any public speaking
Just
position.
Like Tommy Boy.
Oh, yeah.
So I grabbed the mic, and so glad I didn't break into Beastie Boys.
Damn it.
Yeah.
And I did it like this. I did it like that.
Did you have
I was
a solid
thinking more about what I was going to do in the mashed potatoes. But
did you have a solid 5 minutes?
No, I did. I did. So
because I can write jokes for you next time your dad retires and you start another business, dude. I will kill it.
And it worked out so cool because somebody, I said, look, years ago, I approached my dad and I said, I want to make more money. And he simply told me you have to work more hours.
For sure.
So I did a short film in 2016 that was titled Work More Hours. And I ended up giving the speech about how I correlate what my dad taught me about work ethic. And you only have so many hours, make the most out of it.
Yep.
There's no you can waste a lot of time trying to get rich or get ahead. But if you just bust your ass and focus and deal with your 24 hours a day, not anybody else's, your 24 hours, you can outwork your competition and outwork yourself to a point and get where you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this whole tie about how I tie this into having a job and doing food plots and checking trail cameras, making time for the kids and making time for the wife and hunting and all that. And then I get done, and I said, you know, and here I am, you know, 38 years old, and I'm still trying to impress my dad. And everybody's like, waterfalls, you know what I mean? Yep. Everybody's bawling. Yep. And my wife goes, you've been working on a short film idea? I think you just got it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, holy shit. So I had the script for my short film, and
it's called Please Love Me, Daddy.
Yeah. It's Please Keep Me in the Wheel.
Funny story. Don't search that on Search Hubs, because you'll find some other videos.
All right, come on.
I'm just kidding.
But it is on, it's on Vimeo and YouTube and stuff, but it's called Work More Hours, and it's just, you know, it's a 3-minute short film and heavy voiceover, but I talk about how I took, and like you were saying, you know, mm-hmm. bow hunting was your thing that kept you on the right path, kept yeah. you grinding, kept you disciplined. And for me, I didn't grow up hunting. Mm-hmm. And that's the way the short film starts. My first line is, I wasn't always a hunter.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't something that we did. It wasn't something I was taught growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But I got into it like when I was like 22, 23 years old.
Yeah.
Is when I got into hunting. And just completely obsessed with it. Like,
oh, yeah.
Literally, there's nothing I do other than think about it. And every year that I do it, I want to do it more. I want to do it more. I want to do it more. So, you know, we get into the Wicked Tree Gear side of things. And I know this is something I want to do. And I really like the business side of it. I like the product development side of it.
Yeah.
And, but I hate calling it the entertainment side of it. But, you know,
media.
Photos, mm-hmm. short films,
yeah.
web shows, you know, I do like that side of it. But at the end of the day, it's about, you know, sharing stories.
Yeah.
But I like hunting camp. Like if hunting camp was like not a place, but a thing.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, like, yeah, oh, for yeah. sure.
Like
for
this
sure.
is hunting camp.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what we call it. Hunting camp radio.
Yeah.
For old people who don't know what podcasts are, I'm like, hunting camp radio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly what
this,
it is.
This is what I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like shooting shit too, but
yeah,
I
yeah.
like this is what yeah. I enjoy.
Well, this but like, you know, like this, growing up with a hunting camp, that's what brings us back to this shit right here. Is
yeah,
yeah.
that we get to share stories and we get to talk about hunting a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, let's do this. We're gonna talk about hunting camp.
Yeah.
Let's take a pee break and then we'll drink some beers and have fun in hunting camp and talk about hunting.
Damn.
Let's
do it.
Yeah, I like it.
Let's do it. All right, we're back from our beer refreshment and urination break. We're getting ready to fire off.
I gotta pee again. My bad.
I would have Johnny Utah just reach up and slap you in the face.
Like if he could choke me out. Look at those muscles.
The muscles.
So we're getting ready to talk about like hunting camp, right? Because that's mm-hmm. what we do. This is hunting camp essentially, and really all it is hanging out with good friends.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just gonna go hunting in the next morning. So it brings
bullshit.
A different like feel to it, though, don't it? Like, Steve, you came over and you just like stayed the night at my house because we'd be up and we'd have some beers, get ready to go podcast, or we'd podcast or do
yeah.
whatever, and then go hunting the next morning. It's just cooler to like, it's almost like a sleepover, but you're going to go try and kill some shit the
Dude,
next day.
It's a big boy sleepover, is what hunt yeah. camp is.
Oh, for
it's
sure.
a sleepover for adult men.
Don't yeah. say big boy sleepover.
It's yeah. a big boy sleepover. I'll bring my blankie and my teddy.
Don't.
All right, instead of a teddy, right, bring your favorite mount.
Hey, okay. I don't want to talk about hunting camp anymore.
Yeah.
That topic's over now.
Yeah.
You ruined it, Steve.
Hey, do you remember when I had to pull out my adult Pampers?
What?
Yeah, it was weird. I pee the bed a lot. I wore onesie pajamas. Kurt never wants me at hunting camp again.
Okay.
All
I'm
right.
I'm just kidding.
I'm like,
no, it was.
Man, these guys really do or like tell everything.
Yeah. No, it
told you we were open, man.
It is super fun to just you're hanging out with your friends, your buddies, and you're just hanging all night. It's a vacation, man. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, yeah. to yeah. a point. But if you didn't start hunting until you were 22, and yep. it's not like that's super late. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot of people that can relate. But
yeah, me.
Yeah.
I relate.
Yeah. How old were you, Eric, when you started hunting? Like bow hunting.
Oh, bow hunting?
Yeah.
21, 22?
So, yeah, that's
Same
all
age.
Relatable.
But mm-hmm. I grew up hunting my whole life, just
yeah.
not bow hunting.
Yeah.
I didn't get serious into it until I was 21, 22.
Well, and you know, a lot of it was just nature of where I grew up. In central Kentucky in the 80s, we didn't even have deer. I mean, and I've told this story a couple times that we were sitting at the dinner table and my dad came home from work and we were kind of like, I don't want to say the traditional American wholesome family. It was like
yeah.
more like married with children style,
sure.
you know?
Oh, yeah, that's exactly how our household was.
It's a too. Great way to explain that.
Katie Seagal was your mom?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, like, we were sitting down there eating dinner one night, and my dad's like, hey, I saw a deer today. And I'm like, oh, Now, this will tell you my education on whitetails at that time. Mm-hmm. I said, was it a male or female?
Mm.
I didn't know buck or doe.
Yeah.
We didn't have them. We had cows and horses,
you know? Yeah.
So he's like, it was a doe. And I said, that's a female? And he goes, yeah. And I'm like, oh, like, how big was it?
Mm-hmm.
I had no clue. Yeah. I was 18 years old before I saw my first wild deer on the hoof.
No shit.
Yeah, we didn't have them. Yeah, we didn't have them at all.
What were we doing at that exact moment?
It actually jumped over my 87 red Camaro Rally Sport.
Oh, you had an RS. Yeah. You had the grocery getter.
Yeah, 87. Yeah, it was. It wasn't.
Hey, chicks don't know the difference between V6 and
V8.
They
didn't have a clue. Yeah, they didn't have a clue.
No clue.
It was a Camaro, so I had redneck street cred. And the chicks thought it was cool, you know?
T-tops?
T-tops?
Yeah.
Attaboy. Yeah. I just asked that.
86 Cutlass with T-tops right now.
There you
now.
Go. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So.
I remember my dad said that, I mean, it was a lot, it was way before the 80s. My dad's like, we didn't have deer growing up. I never saw them.
Uh-uh.
So that, I get what you're saying, especially probably, I don't know, I'm not familiar with that area of Kentucky, but.
Well, I mean.
That just shows the impact of hunters, by the way.
It is, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now in northern Kentucky and in western Kentucky, they had a pretty good deer population and a good age structure as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just seemed like it kept kind of working its way and it filled itself in, you know, in the entire state. So by the time I remember I graduated high school, like some of my buddies were shooting some, you know, 2-year-old and 3-year-old bucks, but they were probably, like 115s, 110s. You know,
probably great bucks, especially back in the day.
Sure.
And still are for some people, you know.
Yep. And then through college, like I remember seeing some guys around Richmond, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
One of my neighbors, I hear like hooting and hollering one night, you know, and I look out the window and he has this buck strapped to the hood of his Jeep. And I'm like, wow, that's kind of cool. I mean, kind of redneck, but I dig it. I can get down with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's neat. Again, hunting was not something that I did, you know, like if we needed meat, we just went and shot one of our cows out back, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So that we fished a lot. We did fish a whole bunch. We had a farm pond and stuff, but bluegill catfish was kind of my gig, and frog gigging. Love.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You get the little trident thing right there on the broom handle. Oh, yes, son.
Yeah. But I was always the flashlight holder. Dad was always the gigger, right. You know what
and
I mean?
And you weren't holding the flashlight right.
Never.
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 Shine it right in their eyeballs. I'm like, I don't know how to get any more inside that frog's eyeballs, you know? Like, I got a laser beam on him, you know? Give me a break.
Just hold the flashlight
but
right.
But you never did it right. He grabbed your hand and moved it right where
you were. Oh, yeah, yeah. He would move it away and then back to the spot I was in. He's like,
the exact
there.
Spot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then we'd come home and mom's like, how'd you guys do? Well, he didn't hold the flashlight right. It's his fault. And I'm like, what the hell, you know? So Pop's
so true.
Was tough.
Like, that's every kid that ever did that too.
It's kind of like Joe Dirt, where he's like, "Yeah, you're probably the retriever," which he actually was.
right.
You know what I'm just thinking about this? What I'm less mad at? This is kind of off topic, but like when you see older taxidermy, just based on what you're telling me, I can't even get mad at that because what was the demand for taxidermists in Central Kentucky if there's no damn deer?
No, exactly.
There's something about bad old taxidermy.
It is kind of funny though.
You know, it is funny,
but I like it. I like when I go.
The neck mount.
Because there's not a lot of. They don't got a lot of work. It's like, this is what they're doing. I mean, it's like, dude, how many UFOologists can you call right now?
Well, and
give it like 5 years, you'll have 50 more. But
or
I'm just saying, there's
just
none.
A head mount.
None right now.
Just like the heads.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm.
Like from the jaw forward or whatever. You know what I mean?
It's hilarious.
But like, once I moved to northern Kentucky, and that's where I started policing. I was actually in Florence, Kentucky, which is just below Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And, you a Bengals fan?
Kind of by geographical pull.
That's all I needed.
Let the man get through his
story. That's all I needed.
I'm not a Marvin Lewis fan. I just thought he had no control
over
his team.
Well, good. He's gone this year. So.
Yeah, right. So one of the guys that I was a cop with and I went to the academy with, he was from Cincinnati, originally from Texas. So he gets a little cred, you know, being a Texan. And
did you call him Tex?
No, I usually just made fun of the Cowboys in good fun, you know. But so and told a lot of those steers and, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Yep. So anyways, he comes to me one day and he goes, hey, dude, let's get into deer hunting. I'm like, I don't know anything about hunting deers. Do you?
Deers.
And he's like, no, I don't. But they got a lot of them around here in northern Kentucky. We ought to get into it. And I'm like, yeah, I'll give it a whirl. You know what I mean? I'll try anything once. So dating myself, I'm 41. I went to the public library and I got a bunch of books about deer hunting.
That's pretty cool, man.
How I taught myself how to deer hunt.
That is awesome, actually.
And
so libraries are actually useful
at that time.
So you do know how to read.
I do know how to read.
You do know how to read. So you do read books.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Did you read that book?
No, books I'll read front to back. Magazines, for whatever reason. It's just a weird thing. I do them backwards, forward. I don't know what it is. So,
dude, you're going to see some wild stuff in the magazines I read. It's going to be like, how did it start out like this and end so sweetly?
Yeah, I think because I want to hear the punchline and then hear the grind. Yeah. You know what I mean?
There you go.
Do you remember any specific books that, that you grabbed or any specific authors, rather?
No, well, I have some of them. I ended up buying them.
Nice. Oh, that's awesome.
That's fucking cool.
Yeah, so it's kind of neat. Like, of course, it's not the original book that I checked out, but I went back and bought the book. So I did pick up some of the Fred Bear conservation stuff.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a Whitetail Strategies 101.
Dude, I read that book.
That's kind of got to be like your original deer camp, though, kind of.
It was.
And you know what I mean? That takes you back to a point where you were like, okay, I don't know anything about deer hunting.
Nothing.
But I'm going to go read these books. But then later in life, you're like, I think I'm going to read those books.
Was there a deer hunt for dummies?
Well, how long did it take you to, or maybe you never did, I don't know. I'm sure within time somewhere along the line. How long did it take you to have a hunting camp experience with other people and you were going to go hunting together? Or, you know, not separate, doing your own thing, but you guys were all going hunting in the morning. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, immediately, because I had my buddy Jason that I got into hunting with. So we would always hook up and either jump in my truck or his truck. We would drive to the same spot. We'd park. And, you know, we'd get out of the truck, we'd spray ourselves down. Okay, now spray my back. You know what I mean? Yeah. Spray your back. Oh, yeah. You know, okay, spray my hands. Oh, got to start all over again.
Yeah.
Did you wear those boots into the gas station? Uh-huh. You know? So we went through that process, and we're rifle hunting, okay? We're shooting stuff 300 yards, 200 yards away, and we're, like, worried about scent control.
But that's a lot where it starts, you know?
It is.
It's just
getting those foundations down, and, you know, you what you see on television or what you read in a magazine, you presume that that is the way you're supposed to do it. Cause that's the only, I have nothing to compare it to.
Or how it's going to happen.
Right. Right. Yes. So I thought that I would see a 200-inch buck come stand broadside the first day. It didn't work that way at all. I was very disappointed. You know what I mean? I've been lied to for all these years. We hunted every single day of rifle season, every single day, the last day of rifle season. A doe comes out and I'm like, Winchester 270, and she kicks and runs off. And I'm like, well, shit, I missed. A second doe walks out 2 seconds later.
Oh, fuck.
She kicks, she runs off. And I'm like, damn, here I am, a cop. I should probably be a better shot, better marksman than this. And I'm like, I suck. Landowner calls my cell phone. I just heard two gunshots down there in my lower field. You down there? Yeah. Well, what'd you shoot? I mean, I shot at two different does, but I missed them both. What do you mean you missed them both? I'm like, I missed them both. They didn't fall over. They ran away. He's like, I'll be down there and just give me 5 minutes.
So, no.
He comes down there and we start walking. He's like, where was the shot? And I'm like, right there. And he goes, so did you shoot those two does that are laying 20 yards dead over there?
No.
So in Kentucky, it's one buck and two does.
Oh,
that's what you get with your license. So, and you can buy bonus antlers permits after that. And I'm like, holy shit, I did it my first year. Uh-huh. Like, I got it. You know, it was the last day, you know, but I'm like, I freaking did it. Like,
that happened.
So that's funny.
Awesome. I mean, I was like, you know, 20 days of grinding or, you know what I mean? And I'm like, I finally did it. So then the goal was, okay, next year I really want to try to get a buck, right?
Yeah.
And that's what everybody wants to try to get. And, went a couple of seasons, more does, you know, then I finally shot my first buck and I'm like, dude, I just killed state record. Mark it down.
That's what it feels like. Mark it's mine. Down.
7.82-inch buck.
Hell yeah.
That was my first deer.
My buck right here. I don't know what this 7-pointer, that's my first buck ever.
You got me.
I was 14.
I think you might have me beat.
Yeah.
Ah, man.
But that's the cool thing about it is like my dad's first buck is a spike and one side's this long and the other side is that long and he has a skull plate. I want to get it in here actually.
That's cool.
But then, you know, like I don't know how many years later he kills 191-inch mainframe eight, you know, like it's crazy what I think people dwell on, like the first buck deal, like that's my first bow buck. You can't see it. We're test filming this podcast, but that's my first buck right there with a bow when I was 15.
That's awesome.
And I'm still really proud of that, you know. And but it doesn't matter. Like, Steve, your first bow buck is not a giant, but it doesn't matter. Yeah. That's like the nostalgia of deer hunting, you know, right. Like the build up, and you either get bit by the deep, I want to kill big bucks bug, which most people do, sure. but how serious, or you just like enjoy shooting deer. And
let me ask you this. My first bug was a little fork horn, and my old man,
it's awesome.
My old man still has never shot a buck to this day.
You know what they call that? The mysterious Y buck.
The Y buck.
So they're like, so I was like, yeah, I just shot a buck before my old man. You know, I was super proud. I wish I still had it. I don't have it anymore.
Oh, no. What happened? Say, you always get one up on him.
Right. I was probably 14, probably internet, 12, 13 when I shot it, and it fell off the wall. The skull plate cracked. And I'm like, well, whatever. And
you know what cracked? I threw it away. You put that 2x4 in between the antlers to stretch it a little bit.
Keep it from drying
a little bit more.
Yeah, green score. Shit, that's the real score.
But back then I didn't know. You know, like it fell on the ground, it cracked. I'm like, well, it ain't worth anything now. I'm just gonna throw it away.
Damn,
it's a shame.
It sucks.
You know, let me ask you guys this: if you had enough money, would you go back? And if you had enough money and the price was right, you could buy the exact model of your very first car, and someone would put it in the same condition. Would you buy that?
No. I still have my very first car.
So. I was expecting a deer hunting question, and I'm upset that it wasn't.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry, but like that just to bring you back. Like, dude, shit from your youth holds on. I would definitely buy my very first car.
No, I don't care about it. I don't care.
I'll put it in the same garage as my deer because my first of
terrible
everything.
Terrible job.
Like, looking back, I wish I still had that first buck. Yes, dude, that's where you're going.
Yeah,
tell me, I would love to have a nostalgia garage.
I would go back and buy memories, but not material items.
Oh, you buy memories. Okay.
Yep.
Right, that's where you're at.
If I could go back to cruising the loop in downtown Jesmond County with my girl, dude, I would do that.
That's what we did in Davenport. You cruise the loop. You cruise the one
last night. The he did that.
Yeah. No, I didn't.
I think I just like the material things sometimes bring back really good memories. That's why I asked.
But the thing is like with deer hunting, like, yeah, like racks are an item, but it's not a material thing. It's a paycheck for your hard work, essentially.
Yeah, but
it's a memory.
Can those physical items not bring back really good memories?
Well, they can, but I don't feel in the same weight as your first buck can, or your first bow buck can, or John wants a beer. Grab him a beer. Or a hard 25-day hard hunt, like your first 150-inch deer. Like,
but it for sure can, because my car, I look at every day. I drive it.
Probably, I don't have that relationship.
I know
with
you
the
don't.
Items,
but I'm saying. But I'm saying. It can do that.
I do get what you're saying.
I drive it probably once a month, and I used to drive it every day.
Right.
And I look back on those memories of the good times I've had in that car. It can make that relationship.
You did make meet my words there. Steve, I didn't like Steve's point because we were so deep in deer hunting, and he was like a ass fuck and just took us straight
to I did not mean to do that, but I just wanted to see if anyone else could relate to how I was thinking. That's kind of how I was thinking.
So how long from when you killed those two does with the rifle, how long from then? I imagine then it just clicked for you, and you were addicted.
Well, yes and no. So I got into, my family's always been into like dirt track, circle track stuff.
Yeah.
One side of the family was in drag cars and the other side of the family was in dirt.
Drag racing.
Yeah. And it was, well, and that was the thing. We always went back and forth at each other.
Yeah,
we're like,
drag racing and circle track guys do not get
along.
Oh,
no. It's like skiers and snowboarders, right?
For sure.
Yeah. So it was always like asphalt's used to get to the dirt track. You know what I mean? That was kind of our thing.
Yeah. Oh, so one's rich and one's not. All right.
I can go four left, but you can't go in a straight line.
Exactly.
I've heard them all.
Yeah. All you do is turn left. Yeah. You know, I'm like, technically, I turn right to turn left, like Cars movie, you know, for those with kids that watch Disney movies all the time. So I got into dirt track stuff, which, you know, during the dirt track season is still going, you know, it's during hunting season. So it was kind of, I was doing, you know, doing both. And I had shot a couple of bucks at this point, and I remember the last buck that I shot with a gun was in 2008. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 2007. And I shot this buck, and I mean, I was kind of excited like when the buck came in, and then I shot him, and it was 120-inch, 125-inch 10-pointer.
Yeah.
And my buddy texted me, which was more fun. You know, because then you're back in hunting camp again. So your buddy says, dude, I just heard a shot. Was that you? Yeah, it was. What was it? And I'm like, slammer. You know, giant.
Uh-huh.
So he comes down, helps me track this buck. And I'm not excited. Like, at all.
Really?
And he's like, dude, you're not stoked. Like, I'm stoked for you. That's a great buck. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's a good buck. And I'm glad that it was a short recovery. And I'm glad for all that. I got a ton of meat. It's a giant bodied buck.
Yeah.
But I just don't feel the same as I did. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, dude, I was literally falling out of my tree, like knees shaking, buck fever, even after the buck was, you know, down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, man, I really, like, I missed that feeling, mm-hmm. like that excitement, you know? So I'm telling, there's a local gun shop that I bought my gun from, and he was an archery shop as well there in Florence, Kentucky. There's a little store called Mark's Guns. And the guy that owned it or that ran it, his name is Joe Beck. And Joe taught me everything I knew about hunting outside of those textbooks. And he's like, dude, I heard you shot a buck. Let me see a picture. I show it to him. He's like, hey, good buck. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I don't know if I'm going to stick with hunting. And he's like, what? I'm like, I just, you know, like, I don't know. It just didn't do a lot for me. And he's like, hold on a second. Let me show you this bow.
I knew where that was going. Yeah.
So he puts a bow in my hand.
When you say gun shop, archery shop, I knew exactly where that was going.
And he put a Matthews LX or FX, whichever one came first. That was the one that he gave me. And,
mm-hmm.
and so he says, here, try this out. And I shot it, you know, beside the shop a little bit. And I'm like, that's kind of fun. It's a lot nicer than the bow that I had as a kid, my kid bow that my parents bought me, you know, like this fiberglass
long bow. Yeah.
From Sears.
Right. Yeah. I had an old Brave Warrior. That's what I started with. Yeah. Whatever brand that was.
Yeah. And I'm like, this is pretty fun. And he goes, you know, I'm going to take a chance on you. So what's that? And he goes, well, Matthews gives me one free bow to give away a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I can give it to anybody. I've got loyal customers who have been buying bows and guns off of me for years. You don't spend any money. You're a tight ass. But I'm going to take a chance, and I'm going to give you a bow because I really think this is going to be something, a part of your life kind mm-hmm. of deal. You know, you're really going to take to it.
He didn't want to see you get out of hunting.
Right. And he did not want to see me get out of hunting.
That's cool,
man.
He
bet on himself, and that bet paid off.
Yeah. And so he gave me this bow, and I'm like, wow, this was super awesome of me. And then he gave me one of his old sights. It was like an old sword sight, you know, and old stabilizer and release, and got me set up with some arrows. I think the arrows was the only thing I had to buy, but I got them on his employee discount. And then I went two seasons of every time I tried to draw, every time I tried to stand up, I got busted, got busted. So then I went back to the textbooks because I never read the archery sections before.
Sure.
I was just looking at rifle sections. You know what I mean?
Well, that it applied to what you were doing.
Yep. So I went back to the archery sections. And I'm like, okay, if deer can't see me or smell me, then I'll have a better chance of taking a deer. And then I shot my first doe with my bow in like 2010, 2011. And I called him and I said, dude, I got that feeling back. I'm like, and it's way stronger than it ever was. I'm like, I'm hooked. I'm a bow hunter.
Yeah.
Period. And he's like, well, come on, dude. You just killed your first deer. I'm like, no. I'm a bow hunter.
I'm in.
I already know more than anything I've ever known in my life. I will be a bow hunter till the day I die.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, I have not harvested or gone hunting with anything other than a bow. Turkeys, antelope, whitetails. Negative 17 degrees, 98 degrees. It doesn't matter.
Since 08.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's my last firearm buck was, and I started gun hunting like you did, and then I did both because you get more time with a bow in Illinois. And the last gun, firearm, muzzleloader buck I killed was this guy and a buck hanging in the studio. And that was 2010. Mm-hmm. And I just was like, I like both. I respect both, but I just get more out of it mentally.
Yep.
You know, you're saying.
The only buck I've ever shot with a gun is that first one I ever shot.
Yeah, which after is cool.
That, you know, because I grew up, it was a, you know, it was a 1 week deal in December where you went to hunting camp.
That's a really common thing for a lot of people.
You pushed deer, and that's what you did. And then, you know, I was talking about, you know, Doug Schmidt on the show. They got me into bow hunting. They said, just buy a bow. So I bought a $125 bow. Arrows released. It was all set up, ready to go. And that first doe I shot, I go, I can see me doing this forever.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll ever pick up a gun again.
Right.
Yeah. The day I quit bow hunting, I don't know what. I mean, I'm not saying there is a day, but if there was a day, I don't know. Somebody better. You guys better be coming running because something's wrong with me. I'm driving towards something that I shouldn't be driving towards or something. I don't know.
Well, and it's kind of a weird deal, too, because, like, in Kentucky, the rifle season lines up perfectly with the rut. Mm. So there's a big draw, obviously, for gun hunting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in Kentucky, as long as you're willing to wear orange, you can go ahead and bow hunt year round.
Mm-hmm. And that's how Illinois
season round, I should say.
It just changed like 3 years ago. In Illinois, because our firearm season falls, I'm sure you know, falls during the rut. Peak rut's always an argument. But we can never bow hunt during firearm season. It closed down, but now you can if you wear blaze. Yeah. And you got to apply for a firearm permit. You have to have a valid firearm permit, and you can bow hunt during firearm season.
Yep.
So
let me ask I want to ask a hard question.
Okay.
You ready for it?
Yep.
So you've had...
It's not going to be a hard question.
Quite a few different... And we've talked to you a little bit, but you get into something and you're like, yo, I want to do this for a couple of years. Like, I want to be a police officer for 2 years.
Sure.
You end up sticking around. Now that you've got the bow hunting bug, mm-hmm. and obviously you've done it for quite a few years mm-hmm. now.
Yep.
With Arrowwild TV, Johnny Utah Creative... Is this something that you believe is going to stick for a long time, or do you think maybe you might get bored with it and trail off?
No,
I
mean,
ask a hard question.
No, it's a good question too. I mean,
that was actually a hard question.
Yeah, I mean, because when I went into policing, my first initial thought was I'm not going to do this very long, and I kind of got stuck in it, but it was mostly financial. Being responsible
kids
adults,
and a wife, okay. Yeah,
you know what I mean? Yep. So I kind of got stuck there. But while I was there, you know, I had my landscape company that I ran. Well, I would run it 3 days a week myself, and then my foreman would run it the 4 days that I was policing. So that was a set, 7 days a week deal. And I was also part owner of Wicked Tree Gear and doing White Knuckle. So it was easy to still be a cop because it was really like, that's where I went to take a break, almost.
Yeah, right.
And
pulling people over with unregistered firearms. Oh, that's a good fucking break.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
So, and it's funny because now that I've moved to a small town, Iowa, I was talking to one of the cops there the other day, and I said, hey, how many calls do you guys get? And he goes, we got maybe one or two a day. This is no exaggeration. At my old police department, we would run 40 was the average 40, 41 calls a day per man per shift.
Holy shit, dude.
So
that's a scary job, man.
Oh, yeah. And
very scary.
We had I-75, 7.5 miles of I-75, number one corridor for drug trafficking, And I mean, we'd have a couple of murders every year and, that kind of stuff. But it was so funny because I did the math on it. And I'm like, not to pick on small town policing because the risk is still there.
Yeah.
They could get shot. They could go on could deal with some roughnecks just as easy as anybody. And also, a lot of times their backup isn't there as quick as some big cities.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But based on call volume alone, I saw more action in a year than my local Iowa cops will see in 18 years.
That's insane.
Damn. That's crazy to even compute those numbers.
How many dudes you put in handcuffs that had Carson Palmer jerseys on?
So we used to actually deal with the Bengals quite a bit. A lot of them lived in
Florence.
I love
it you said that. You say that so Kentuckily, the Bengals. I love it.
I could have said the Bengals.
No, it's the Bengals.
The Bengals.
Hey, because Kenny Anderson... Uh-huh. is from Rock Island. Uh-huh. He went to school in Rock Island, but like that's why I became a Bengals fan, because Kenny Anderson and a bar my dad used to give me an underage had a Kenny Anderson signed Bengals. Continue.
Well, so quick, funny little story about the Bengals and policing.
I'll be arrested, Pac-Man Joe. It'll be awesome.
That guy, like his teammates kept him out of handcuffs so many times. And
he
I
got
know
arrested
this.
With a broken neck. Who gets arrested with a... broken neck.
A complete asshole.
Like, dude, you have to be stupid as shit.
Yeah. Continue. So one of the guys I worked with, covered in tattoos, he looks like all of us, what I mean? He's one of our canine guys, one of my best friends in the world, Brian Murphy. He pulls over Odell Thurman one night.
Need one?
I'm almost.
Okay. I'll take a cold one.
He pulls over Odell Thurman, and Odell's in the passenger seat, and his girlfriend's driving. and they were speeding, you know, on 75. And knowing Brian, they had to have been doing like 40 over for him to get out of a cruiser. You know what I mean?
Oh, shit.
So he pulls him over, and she's like, do you know who this is? This is Odell Thurman. And he goes, no.
No.
Now, Murphy's...
That like, sounds like, yeah, something we would say. Yeah, we have like, no idea who the fuck yes. are.
He's like big forearms, full sleeve tattoos, canine guy, still believes wrestling is real. I'm sorry, Brian, it's not real. But
hey
Steve, yep. Steve believes that.
Hey, okay. Watch your fucking mouth, all right?
Let him tell a story, Steve.
No. What kind of bullshit? Yeah. All right, continue.
So he's all about wrestling, loves it. He goes to all the shows all the time. And so he says, you know, who like Odell Thurman? Who's that? She goes, you don't know who Odell Thurman is? Like, he plays for the Bengals, baby. And he's like, yeah, okay. Like, is that a sports team? So they're like, yeah, it's a sports team. So he looks at Brian and he goes, why don't you believe me that, like, I play for the Bengals? And he goes, football, right? Yeah. Why don't you believe me? He goes, like, I just thought you'd be bigger.
And oh, man.
Odell was like 5'9", 150 or something yeah. like that, you know? But we used to deal with those guys all the time. They'd be hanging out at Waffle House, and a lot of them lived in the city and, you know, be in and around.
Would they be like, you know who I am, right?
Yeah, some of them were. I remember there was one guy, and I do like sports. I just don't know all the players' names. But there was one guy.
Steve does.
Played for the Bengals. Nathan, he was an offensive lineman for the Bengals. I believe he was...
Steve's panicking because he's failing on
know.
On
no, doesn't know his favorite year. Team.
Huge night. He was a huge, huge dude. But I pulled him over one night and was like one of the nicest humans I've ever dealt with in my life. He was the one that taught me about the NFL Pro Card. Like, it's like a clear card, and that each one gives.
I have no idea.
It's
what
like
an ID.
It's like ID. Yeah, and I didn't know it. Really? Apparently, you have to be a legitimate NFL player to have like your NFL Pro Card. You know,
yeah,
know
no shit.
They got like Roth IRAs and shit set up. My homie moved. From Detroit. Uh-huh. He was like a rookie. He only made it 1 year, but like they have like Roth, like the NFL Roth.
Talk straight
IRA
into
plans.
Your mic, Brohim.
Man, right here.
There you go.
Yeah, they got like Roth IRA plans and shit
he's
set
still,
up for
he's
these
still
dudes.
Upset because he doesn't know like that yeah. player's name.
No,
or
I'm
his
trying
favorite.
To think of
hey,
what
you know what I
want to
do.
Year was it?
Hey, you know what I want? I don't give a fuck about football. I want to talk about Arrow Wild TV.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
That's what I was. I want to talk.
Wait, about I have Wild one TV. Question yes. before that. Uh-huh. How'd you end up in Iowa? The greatest Ooh,
yeah.
state.
Yeah,
that's a good question.
In this country.
Hey, wait, don't you know who we are?
The greatest state in this country.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
right. Eric's like subtly like shitting on Illinois, which you can shit
because,
on Illinois.
We're going to shit on us.
Wait,
dude.
Wait, we're the only yep. Iowa boys here.
Well,
hey, we're
I,
in the tank.
I had heard about Pike County, Illinois. You know, as I was starting to learn more about hunting, I kept hearing, you know, Pike County. That's where all the big bucks are. You know, and but Wicked Tree Gear was we did all of our assembly in Mount Pleasant, Iowa.
Gotcha.
And so I was making a lot of trips back and forth on my days off, going, you know, from Kentucky, you know, to Mount Pleasant and working the shop, do some assembly. And Todd and I'd have meetings, whether we were developing new products and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when we sold the company, that was part of the deal. They said, we'll buy the company under one condition. We're going to pay you X amount of dollars. And then for a period of 3 years, you have to work for us during the transition and continue to develop, you know, new products. And you have to move to Iowa. And I'm like, twist my arm. You know, like, are you shitting me?
It was a pretty
you
sweet
know?
Deal. Yeah. You were just hoping Iowa deal was in there. It's like, yeah, it's moving to Iowa. But, yeah, you got
so
a little
like,
extra money.
I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. Well, I get, you know, like if I have to. But I had three preference points. I was going to draw that next year anyways, right. which I had to give up.
Bullshit. Can you get that money back?
I know. I'm like, can I gift the points to like other non-residents or can I get a refund? But so I told one of my buddies, I'm like, yeah, those jerks kept my $150. And he's like, really? You're going to bitch about giving up $150. You now get $3 tags a year because you own land.
Yeah, and you live in the prime spot
yeah.
of Iowa.
I do.
Yeah.
I still would. Yeah. $150 is $150,
That's
bro.
Right. Well, and he's like, so you
That's
live
a used Xbox.
You live 15 miles south of Lee and Tiffany's Salem property. You live 10 miles east of their Keosauqua property. You know, you're 15, 20 miles from Sam Calora and the Calora Buck, and they're like, yeah. I hate you.
Decent.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah,
well, that's
yeah.
why I always tell these guys, I go, hey, just move to Iowa because then you can hunt Iowa every year and you can hunt Illinois.
That's right.
It is
that's
the perfect plan.
And you're close enough to Missouri. You know, you can go to $2 there.
You can hunt Missouri every year, too.
Yeah, okay, we got nothing going for us, all right? We get it. I'll admit it. We got nothing.
Hey, we got that one thing.
Hey, weed will be legal here while we're sitting with a retired narcotics officer.
Oh, yeah. Hey, we're going to have legal weed so we can just get stoned and realize that we're not as good as Iowa. But they can't buy our Iowa residents can buy our pot. Well, we got nothing, bro.
You guys got nothing.
And I will tell you, and that was one of the things.
You're going to have that gas, homie.
Stop.
The whole time I was a cop, you know, don't get me wrong, my job, with any boss, you know, you have a boss that tells you you have to do something, mm-hmm. and you're told that you have to enforce these laws. And I remember sometimes, you know, you arrest somebody and they're like, dude, you're an asshole. I'm like, hey, bro, you ever had a job before? Yeah. Your boss tells you to do something. You don't really want to do it, but you got to do it, right? I'm like, yeah. Well, that's the deal. Chief tells me I got to do this. It ain't nothing personal, man. This is cat and mouse.
Yeah. I think if more cops did that, people would be like, you're right, man. All right.
Yeah.
They were trying to be like, okay, I get
Kurt
it.
Kurt put his own hands behind his back when he said that. Yeah, all right.
He did it kind of like he's done it before. I'm just saying.
I spent one night in jail in my life. That's it. And I'll admit it like a man.
Yeah.
I have two, and it sucks.
And I didn't eat breakfast there. I gave it to the dude next to me because he wanted my. He wanted the fucking.
He wanted your cornbread.
The fruit shit. I'm like, I'm not going to eat this at all. Like,
You can have it. You can have my fruit medley.
You'll get that tomorrow. Fuck this.
The cornbread. Man, you guys get cornbread down south in jail?
Dude, Kentucky cornbread. I do miss that a lot.
The jail cornbread? You miss Kentucky prison cornbread.
Any cornbread made in Kentucky is good.
Did you eat the prison food?
No, I would. So the Boone County Jail, a good friend of mine, Jim Wilson, he runs the work camp. You know, inmate work camp for just the Class D felons. You know, they let them out, go work.
Yeah.
And he runs the work camp. And he called me and said, hey, dude, he said, we got a guy in the work camp. You might want to come down here. I'm like, why is that? And he's like, well, he was the head chef of this Chinese restaurant in town.
Oh, shit.
And he's going to be here for 3 years. He's like, we eating good in the neighborhood.
We eating good.
So I ended up going down there all the time. You know, right around lunchtime, I'd be like, hey, dispatch, the jail needs me down there. I got to go interview a suspect, you know, in custody real fast. And I'd go there and eat, and it was phenomenal.
Really?
Yeah.
The best food you ever ate in your life.
I'm going to ask you a question. You can choose to answer it, or you can tell me to fuck right off. Yeah. Have you ever spent a night in jail?
No. I have. I got one ticket before I was a cop. My dad, he got hit by a car. He was on a tractor.
Holy shit!
And they were air carrying him to UK hospital.
Holy shit! This is serious.
Yeah, yeah. He had kinds of crazy compound fractures, you know, in his leg.
Wow. Oh shit!
So I'm hauling the mail, you know, heading to the hospital. And I get pulled over by a statey. Oh,
that's an understandable situation.
By a statey.
And the statey, he pulls me over, and I said, "Hey, man," I said, I have ultimate respect for law enforcement." You know, I wasn't a cop at this time. I said, hey, I got a lot of respect for cops. If you're going to write me a ticket, write me a damn ticket because I'm going to speed again. My dad's in the hospital. He's, you know, going under surgery. And I was like, I got to get there. And he's like, all right. He wrote me a ticket. And I kept flying. You know what I mean? I kept speeding. But he didn't follow me and write me another ticket. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So it's kind of whatever. But, yeah, so.
But then again, your boss tells you what to do.
That's right.
You got to do it.
Yeah. Yep. And then now since I haven't been a cop for 3.5 years now, and small town Iowa, I have received 5 warnings and 3 tickets.
Trust me. In the hometown I'm from, there's 6,000 people and about 14 cops.
Yeah.
What the hell are you doing, dude?
Yeah.
I've lived here for 6 years and seen a cop 3 times near my house.
Twice at the bar.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one of them was a window tint ticket, which I didn't even know that was a thing. And again, in a big city, if a cop writes somebody for window tint, I would have gotten suspended because that would have put me off the radar and not available to take a hot call.
Yeah.
They would have lit my ass up. You know what I mean? But I got a ticket for 4 over.
Four
miles an hour over.
What's the saying? 9, you're fine. 10, you're mine.
That's right.
Yep.
Is that true?
That applies to big cities.
So not rural Illinois.
This guy got you for 4 over.
I think highways that applies.
Was it highway? Was that fair?
So my rule was.
I'm trying to help the working class Bowhunter podcast listeners. You're distracted by this episode because we're all over and you're doing 12 over, slower down to 9.
Yeah, if you're in the city, 9 and under, over, you should be okay. On the interstate, 15 and over, and you're probably screwed. So you get a couple extra miles per hour if you're on the,
Okay. Give her a few.
Because it's 70 mile an hour in Illinois. We're going to a trade show to set up the working class booth. I'm 85.
Hey, that's, assuming the PVC doesn't blow out of the back of Eric's truck. That's how fast we're going.
Yep.
True. I've been there.
Interesting. Okay, so
yeah, be careful about that.
We were talking about Arrowwild TV, and we went, this is what we do on working class.
I like it.
And we get even looser when someone's in studio because Steve has more fun. And
more. My bad. So, let's talk Arrowwild TV. Yeah, Arrowwild TV. Cut the shit.
So in 2016 is when I departed from White Knuckle. And, you know, I mean, I'm not going to pull any punches here. Todd and I were having, you know, we were buddies. And we're best friends, and we're business partners, which also creates a lot of strain. And we have two businesses together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had taken over White Knuckle as far as I was in charge of all of the sponsorship negotiations. I was also working directly with the editor for producing the shows and laying out the format of the shows and the script. I was also kind of the team manager with all the pro staff guys. Hey, mm-hmm. dude, make sure you got your photos in time. Make sure you have your video, you know, your footage in time so we can get this episode cut. And so I was dealing directly with that. And it was a lot of strain. We were working together. Now I wasn't living in Kentucky. I'm living right in his back door in Iowa. We're in each other's faces all the time. And there was just a riff.
Yeah.
Things got said. Conversation got heated. I might have threatened to beat him up. You know what I mean? And it was just time to walk away, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, screw you, dude. I'm starting my own thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's happened.
And he was like, if it wasn't for me, he's like, you know, you wouldn't be anybody in this industry. Like I said, it just got heated. He said things he didn't mean. I said things I didn't mean. And so we went our separate ways. So I called all the guys on the team and I said, hey, continue doing your White Knuckle stuff, but it's time for me to. I got to dip. I got to go do my own thing.
Which is cool of you to do it that way. You know, that says a lot about who you are.
And I'm like, I got called out. Because remember earlier I talked about, I don't want anybody to ever say they're the reason I got to where I was at.
Sure.
And somebody just did that.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, well, then I guess it means I got to go do it on my own. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I stepped away and all the guys on the team, except for two, quit. And they said, well, John's not running the show. Then I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Which was awesome.
Yeah, it makes you feel good.
It made me feel good, but at the same time, I didn't know exactly what I was going to do with Arrowwild. Now, these guys just quit their show that they were getting free gear from and, you know, stuff like that. And I'm like, ah, damn. Now I got a lot of pressure, right? So what am I going to do with Arrowwild?
So now you kind of owe – you don't owe them anything, but you feel like
I felt like I did. Yeah, I felt like I owed them that loyalty back.
Right. Yeah.
And I was very fortunate because I was the one negotiating and dealing with the sponsors and making sure the sponsors got their photo assets. Which
all the deliverables,
Yep. And I'll get to those photo assets and why I, you know, certain business things that I thought were so important, but I got, I was in charge of that. So I was the person in their contact. So I also was the person that signed all the contracts. So I sent them an email and said, just so you know, I have stepped down, but all contract, you know, obligations will be met. And I back my name on that. It's my name on the contract. I got phone calls and they said, hey, dude, you're the reason why we're sponsoring the show. So you going to start another show? No, I'm not. I'm done. Mm-hmm. I've had my fill of it. It's too cutthroat. I'm just going to focus on me. I might dabble in photography. Well, if you want to do another web show, here's a check.
No shit.
We want to stay with you. And I'm like, yeah, it's cool. Appreciate it. Then I tell the wife. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to do this. I just turned down, you know, this check or just turned down this sponsor. Right. She's like, you better pick that phone up and call them back. We got mortgage due in a month. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no shit.
And I'm like, oh. I'm like.
You're like, God damn it.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know. Let me think about it.
God damn it.
Yeah.
God
damn it. So it took about.
Hey, it's true, right?
Yeah, it is.
No, but I mean, it took about a month because just based on that, I would have just been doing it for the check. And so I took about a month and I thought, damn it, I really do miss doing the episodes. Right, and I miss talking to, even though they don't live near me and we don't hunt together, I get to see their footage and we talk about our seasons. So it's kind of like deer camp.
It's hunt camp.
Yeah. You know
it's
what I mean?
Hunt camp
it, even all if around. It's over the phone or whatever. So I'm like, damn it, I still like seeing other people's stories and I like sharing stories. So I started calling the people back and I'm like, you know, I at least got to make sure my costs are covered.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as my costs are covered, I can afford to do it because financially I couldn't afford just to fit the bill.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I worked. I didn't seek out anybody extra. I only sought out what I needed to cover expenses, and then it's just kind of continued to grow from there. And, you know, because it wasn't like my day job and it was a hobby, I could really pick and choose who I wanted to work with. Mm-hmm. I'm only going to work with premium brands that I believe in, and I have an intimate relationship with the owner of the company or the head marketing guy of the company. Right. And I respect him as a person. I respect their product, and I respect the direction that they're
Makes
going.
Makes it way easier.
So much easier when you have a – and that's one of the things I always tell people, you know, people sending questions. I'm sure you guys get it all the time too. Hey, man, how do I get into the industry? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, be yourself. Do exactly what you say you're going to do. Be friends with your people. Don't look at them as a business opportunity.
It's work big. Your ass off.
So
I feel, you know, I'll just butt in. All of our partners are like, we know someone personally and we're friends. And I can text them, anyone from any of our partners right now, I can text them right now and be like, hey, what the fuck you doing?
Yep.
And they wouldn't be like, well, you said fuck. Like, I don't have to type a formal email to handle some stuff.
Yep.
That's how it should be. I think.
Even I can text someone and they'll respond.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Steve doesn't handle that stuff.
So and that I don't handle that stuff. That says a lot about the companies that work with us. They're like, we know.
They're huge.
We are willing to familiar risk. Enough with who you are that we know Steve.
Yeah. They're gambling on us as idiots.
I mean,
they're gambling.
I mean, hey, you're not lying.
If someone gambles on me to be a dumb shit.
For a podcast, a hunting podcast that says fuck in this industry. They're gambling.
It's a
just
huge
on
gamble.
That word alone,
or this right here,
right?
The old blue can.
And the beer,
exactly
for real.
That's without a doubt.
That's it's weird that it's a big deal.
Well, just 3 days ago, 4 days ago, I had my first beer in an Instagram story that I've ever done ever, and it was during my cooking thing that one of my recipes called for adding beer to the batter, and I'm like, yeah, just pitch the rest. Just kidding.
Yeah. But that's the industry, right? Like it's. I mean, you understand it more than anybody. Like, that's kind of the – and I don't know. I guess we're fortunate.
It's kind of a weird thing, though, like, if you think about it, that beer and fuck was in the industry before the industry was even a fucking thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's exactly right.
It's very weird.
It's weird to think about.
Yep. It's very weird. But I don't know. Here we are. Whatever.
And, yeah, exactly. Where can it go next?
Well, and –
Straight to the shithole.
Straight
to the outhouse.
I was like, as I'm taking beer cans off the table, I'm like, all right, well,
we're going to hide these.
Yeah.
We're not draining.
Yeah, hey, this is water in these. So you know, I'm navigating through the Arrow Wild thing, and granted, I handled a lot of the business side of White Knuckle. There was still a lot of things that I needed to learn, and I was still trying to navigate, you know, and learn this space myself.
Mm-hmm.
The key thing that helped me the most getting Arrow Wild off the ground and working with these companies was, you got to remember, I was the marketing director of Tecumseh Seed, Glacier Coolers, Wicked Tree Gear. Mm-hmm. I've seen every person in this industry's media kit. I know every person in this industry's numbers because they've all sent their media kits to me for review to sponsor these people.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Horrible media kit. That's a good one. Sponsored that guy. He didn't do crap. Sponsored that guy. He did that, and that actually worked for us and converted to sales. So I'm getting to play both sides of the fence, and I'm learning. I'm writing my own.
You have a playbook.
Basically my own playbook.
You have a playbook right in front of you.
Yes.
Yeah, wow. Now, Coach Khan, I'm going to have this playbook.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a great point.
Yeah. So, and I think, you know, it's one of those things. We all have access to information. It's how you analyze that information and how you store it, save the information, and study it and see how it works. So I'm just constantly, man, I'm, you know, looking at analytics. I'm looking at numbers. I'm looking at conversion and things like that. And I started mirroring, took the best of this and the best of this and the best of this. And I'm like, okay, I have an idea. So I started approaching companies that we worked with. And I'm like, right now we're doing this for you. I have a feeling that the web show market is going to continue to be flooded and numbers are going to go down. You can already see the writing on the wall with Facebook and Instagram algorithms. They hate hunting.
Oh, yeah.
So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to create my own insurance policy. I have this camera and I love photography. I will provide you photo assets. It is a tangible item that you'll always have, and I don't have to worry about deliverables or reach and organics and engagement. I don't have to say I'm going to have X number of people watch this episode or download this number of podcasts. You know what I mean? You guys are killing it, so I wouldn't, you ain't got to worry about shit. But for me, I was like, man, brand new web show. I better put an insurance plan on there. Mm-hmm. Because I understood marketing and knew, you know, let's say somebody's posting two times a day on Facebook and two times a day on Instagram. Well, shit, man, that's 1,400 deliverables they need a year.
Right.
Just to meet those obligations.
Yeah.
And having that marketing background, I can go to, say, Covert Trail Cameras. When are you launching this new product? Well, we're going to launch this new camera in July. Cool. Get me one by June. I'll provide you with 30 photos. What day are you launching on? July 10th. Sweet. I'll schedule four or five posts for July 10th, 11th, and 12th. We'll help you guys with your rollout.
Yeah.
So that's where I see it from a business side, and a lot of people in this industry are like, yeah, dude, just give me a check and some free money. Get the hell out of my way. Let me do what I do. I want to be cool.
Right.
It's, I'm not trying to be cool.
There's
I'm
obligations.
I'm trying to help their business. Yep. I want to make their business grow.
You're fulfilling,
I
believe that, you're fulfilling that contract.
Yes.
Because that touches back on.
Because that's your name on it.
Yes.
Exactly.
Correct.
Yeah. You don't want to be famous. You just want to be respected.
Yes.
You want to be the guy that's like, okay, yeah, this guy's got a good look, and he can post a shitload of shit on Instagram, but what's he really posting rather than here's what the content is.
Yep.
This guy's posting big deer, big food plot plants, big, you
food
know.
Pot plants.
Food plot plants. I was trying to make a
it was weird. Our camera guy back there, we're test filming this, and Cameron's like losing his shit. We should put you on a mic. Sorry, Cameron.
Do you get what I'm saying, though? Like, yeah. I'm like, you want to produce results, but you also want to get good content, but you need the content to be good rather than just some chicken in a bikini.
Sure.
You
Well, I mean, and you know, like, to tie into a good conversation that I had, you know, Cody and I, DeQuista, were talking about this the other day, and he's like, you know, you work out. Yeah, I work out. You work out. Yeah, of course, you know. Why do you work out? Well, I want to be stronger. I want to be healthy. It makes the things I do outside easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You're hiking in and stuff like that. I want to be stronger. Am I a bad person to say that I also want to look decent too? Like, does that make me a bad person for being that vain? You know what I'm saying? Well, so throughout this business thing, it's a double-edged sword because I want to appeal to companies that I work for because I'm doing a good job for them. And I also know that I need a lot of followers or enough followers to substantiate to make sure that I'm getting them that reach, right? So you're always like, it's like you're on the fence where you're, okay, do I need to be a little more popular so I can get more engagement?
Yeah.
But 95% of the people look at you, you work out, and they think just to look better.
Right.
Not to.
Well, there's a whole lot to it. It's a package deal.
Yeah.
For sure. But most people don't look at it that way.
Well, and, you know.
Yeah. I get what you're saying.
And, you know, and to kind of add to that, I graduated college at 129 pounds. And I'm not necessarily going to say I was picked on because I knew my role. I didn't mess with people. I didn't want to get beat up, right?
Right.
But, like, I remember growing up and helping my dad, you know, on the farm. And my mom used to always tell me, she's like, God, I hope that you're bigger than your dad someday. And I'm like, why? And she's like, just so life is easier. Work is easier. You know what I mean?
What, like, a good woman that is.
Yeah.
She's like, I stuck with her dad. He's a puny piece of garbage.
She's like,
I hope you're not.
Yeah. She's like, I've watched him struggle to, like, you know, he has, like, if you're working by yourself, you know, we've all been out there hanging tree stands. There. You get exhausted and you're tired, you know. And so she's like, that in life's just easier. And then I remember, you know, talking to buddies, and he's like, yeah, one thing about being the big guy is kind of cool is nobody ever fucks with you, you know?
That's a good point.
And I'm like, yeah, I could see where life could just be easier. Yeah. But for me, like, and even my workouts have changed so much. It used to be all, like, for show muscle. Now it's so much more practical movements.
Functional.
A lot of rope stuff. And
yeah.
Because it's stuff that I can apply back to what I'm doing and whatnot. But it does make things a whole lot easier, especially, and I do a lot of work myself. I moved to Iowa, didn't know anybody, right? Other than Todd, and then him and I told each other we wanted each other to fall off the face of the earth, you know?
Right.
So I'm like, oh, great. Now I'm back to working by myself again.
Right.
Square one.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do, you know, I've got some friends that help me from time to time with some food plots, but man,
dude, yeah,
I'll tell you, like, my 13-year-old is like a champ with me out there, helping me, like, tote mineral around, trail cameras, and checking
SD
cards.
That's awesome.
So that helps a lot. And
well, let me do this too. So, and we're on the whole AeroWild story, but we're branching off, which I think is good. That's the beauty of podcasting.
we watched several episodes, and I've said it before. I don't watch hunting shows. Uh-huh. I don't watch them. I don't listen to hunting podcasts. I do watch some hunting shows, I guess, like a couple. We were watching here on Carbon TV, uh-huh. I might add, and all this stuff is linked in the description of the episode already. I really enjoy it.
Appreciate it.
The first episode I watched was you going out finding sheds. Mm-hmm. You were basically self-filming yourself.
Yep.
You were self-filming.
Self-filming, yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. Me and Cameron are watching. I'm like, I like this.
Yeah.
And I would be honest, if I didn't like it, I wouldn't be like, oh, yeah, I watched
it. Right. Move on.
Yeah, I would just be like, I don't watch them.
Yeah.
But
like in person, this show sucked.
Yeah. dude, I know you're a marketing guy, but yeah. No, I really did enjoy it. Yeah. I did. And it was easy to watch. It wasn't uncomfortable. Uh-huh. A lot of them are cringeworthy nowadays.
They are.
And it sucks. I get everyone's doing their own thing, and people are still figuring it out, and people might think our show's cringeworthy.
Yeah.
I get it.
Well, sorry about that.
The episode where you're eating a beet?
A turnip,
yeah. Uh-huh. That's totally me.
You gotta taste it.
If the deer are gonna eat this, I gotta try it once.
Yeah.
I've literally seen Eric eat some big time.
Yeah.
Big buck birch.
Oh, dude, I eat mineral all the time. I'll taste it.
Yeah, I mean, if they're gonna eat it,
yeah.
Might as well try it once.
Where can people begin? Arrowwild TV, Carbon TV.
Yeah, Carbon TV, YouTube. Carbon TV, I'll be honest. I mean, I had a lot of early success with Carbon, and I'm seeing like a little bit of a trail off. And I'm not sure what's going on there. It could be my show sucks. You know?
We're on Carbon TV as well. Or we have a separate video series on Carbon TV, right. And we're launching season two now. Mm-hmm. I would agree with you.
It seemed like it's fallen off a little bit. And, you know, with the Carbon and My Outdoor TV and that stuff and Waypoint, I've always looked at them. I'm like, one of these days, Maceo Go
or whatever it's called now, mm-hmm. too.
I'm like, one of them is going to nail it eventually, mm-hmm. and it'll be great. I'm like, maybe they should just all merge together and just rock it out.
I honestly believe
one
that's
giant,
the way to go.
Big platform. Yeah.
That's the way to go. I really do think that.
But YouTube is something I'm really trying to grow a lot more. And we do put the episodes out sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. through Facebook.
We suck at YouTube, man. We suck so bad,
dude,
at YouTube.
Me too. I'm horrible. I had a post the other day. I kind of ran it a little bit. I mm-hmm. try not to do that, but dude, they changed the numbers. You got to have all these special tags. I don't have that information, man. I'm just putting out an episode, like right. doing as real as I can. We're giving away some stuff, and I'm like, you know, every episode I put out there, it's kind of one of those like, hey, this is what worked for me.
Yeah.
It may not work for you, but it worked for me. So I'm not telling you this is the only way to do it, but maybe give this a shot.
That's how I want to come. I mean, maybe we fail sometimes, but like with our partners, like we're not telling you need this,
uh-huh.
but we like it.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have them as a sponsor, and we wouldn't ask them to sponsor our show if we didn't like it.
Right.
You know, if Elite Bow's example, and you know, we love our elites. Have to love them. You know, why would I want to be sponsored by them? Like Lone Wolf Custom Gear, which kind of ties in mm-hmm. how, and I don't think we ever covered this story yet. Mm-hmm. We've been going on. We were wanting to talk about this.
Yeah.
How we all met.
Right.
Because of Lone Wolf Custom
Gear.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. Yep. But example is, I wouldn't want to be sponsored by Lone Wolf Custom Gear if I didn't believe in the product.
Correct.
You know, believe in the OGs of the mobile hunting game.
Yep.
You know, the DeQuistos have wrote the book on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, it's mind-blowing that some people don't understand that.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's – Andre DeQuisto is the Bible of mobile hunting.
Mobile hunting. Right? I mean, nobody was doing it, right? And
He is the god of mobile hunting. I'll say it.
Are we going to have to take a pee break or a episode pause break and bring part two? I would like to do a pee break.
All right. Steve needs a pee break.
We're about to get into some deep stuff.
Okay.
I feel like –
Deep shit here.
Yep. I feel like that'd be a good –
Okay,
I like it. I like it because there is a very interesting story how I got into meeting the DeQuistos and how all of this comes full circle.
Okay, right there. There's the pee break. All right, how Johnny Utah met the DeQuistos.
So, same time that I met Todd Prignitz and mm-hmm. I got involved with Wicked, and like we were talking about just a little bit off recording. When I came across Wicked, I genuinely thought I could add value to the company. I could make that company better. And the slogan that we used to always say is, hey, we didn't invent the mousetrap. We just made a better mousetrap.
Right.
And
it's good board
game. And I think sometimes that's all it is. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, it's 2019. There's not a lot of original brand new ideas unless maybe it's a tech thing or, you know, whatever. But
yeah.
You're just improving something that's existing, right? So I meet Todd, and of course now I'm meeting a whole slew of people, because the only people I knew were hillbillies in Kentucky that I was hunting with, you know,
right,
and they weren't attached to the hunting world.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Todd did introduce me to a lot of people, and, you know, back in the day, Todd did a lot of work with Lone Wolf, original Lone Wolf.
The OG DeQuisto brand.
The OG DeQuisto brand. And he used to tell these stories. Yeah, I used to help Andre do some design work, and it was mostly, you know, Andre had the design on a paper, and Todd would help him put it into a CAD drawing, because that's what Todd did for a living, and he did CAD drawings and stuff. So he would help him with that kind of stuff, and he'd help him go bounce around trade shows. So he knew Andre very well, and he's like, dude, I'm telling you, he's a pretty savvy, crude business dude. Like, you don't want to cross him.
Yeah.
And I kept hearing these stories about the lone wolf, you know what I mean? And this guy, like, I'm like, man, he sounds like a real jerk. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to cross this guy in business or in the dark alley.
He is the lone wolf.
Yeah. And which at the same – about that same time early in that relationship with Todd is he knew – he's a big fan of the movie Point Break. I'm a big fan of the movie Point Break. And Keanu Reeves' character in the movie is Johnny Utah. And being that he's retired, you know – or I'm sorry, he's undercover working with a federal unit. And at the time, that's what I was doing. And – so he's like, dude, that's your nickname. You're Johnny Utah. And the name just kind of stuck.
I need to watch that movie. I learned.
You have to. It's a fantastic. Not the new. When you like Netflix it, don't do like the 2015 remake. It sucks.
Okay.
You got to go with the OG 80s crappy, you know what I mean?
Okay.
CGI or non-CGI and that kind of stuff. So.
That's awesome. You could have gone with the name Johnny Sins. But, you know, it's okay.
So like Johnny Knoxville or, you know, but no, Johnny Utah. So I don't know who Andre is other than this persona of Andre. And then now Todd and I are starting to hit trade shows.
And still, I might add, that's how most people know Andre. Yeah,
right, because he kind of vanished.
Like, well, he's kind of like a mythical being in a way.
Yeah, he was doing those Lone Wolf production DVDs, but like, unless you were going to trade shows in the late 80s, early 90s, that's the only time you got to meet him.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of people would go and meet the brand, and you know, because he was the brand.
Yeah.
Do you
have any of those VHSs?
No, I have DVDs. I don't have any of the VHSs. And so I start going to these shows, and we're doing Wicked. We're doing ATA. We're doing Harrisburg. And, you know, we're doing, like, Ohio Deer and Turkey and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I see this XOP company. And I'm like, what is that? Mm. And I don't know any of the background at this point. All I think is that Andre had a company, and he sold a company. Okay. Yep. That's the only story I've been told. And I'm like, man, that stand looks a lot like an XOP. That's kind of odd. I'm like, who's this like muscle bound
like
dude?
Like a lone wolf.
Yeah. It looks like a lone wolf.
Yeah.
I'm like, who's this muscle bound guy covered in like tattoos, like all the way up the neck and everything. And like every trade show I go to, like, I'm seriously like the guy is staring a hole through me. Like he doesn't want to shoot me. He doesn't want to fight me. He wants to cut me. You know what I mean? I'm like Sons of Anarchy style.
Like intimate? Like just like
bro, I know that look.
Yeah.
Cody hates my guts.
Yeah. I'm like, this guy seriously.
I think.
And then somebody goes, that's Cody DeQuisto. That's Andre's son. And I'm like, if that's the son, like I don't even ever want to meet Andre. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because
right.
Holy shit. Like all these stories are true. So
that's
I'm like,
hilarious.
I was like, I'm just going to avoid this guy because like I already know he wants to fight me. You know? And so we just, I avoid him for years.
Really?
Yeah. And then we're in a group setting and somebody says, hey, John, I want to introduce you to Cody DeQuisto. And I'm like, oh, great. You know, I'm like, there I already know he doesn't like me. I'm a cop. I read people. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
this is what
yeah.
keeps me alive. I know he doesn't like me. And he's like, hey, what's up, bro? I'm like, well, maybe he doesn't hate me, you know? And then like really fast, him and I start having a lot of conversations. We start bumping into each other at shows and we start like, hey, how's it going? How's the setup? You know, how was the last show? Oh, it was good, you know, blah, blah.
He knows exactly who you are. You know exactly who he is.
Right. But we've never spoken.
That's funny, man.
And then right off the bat, within like 20 minutes of our first real conversation, I find out like the dude loves Aquaman. And I'm like, wait a second. Sons of Anarchy wants to stab me. His hero is Aquaman. I'm like
Jason Momoa.
Yeah. Oh no, that's
Owl Boy.
Yeah. So, and I'm
different
like
Aquaman. It's a thing.
So I'm like, okay, maybe he's not like a jerk. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I start meeting Andre, hanging out with Andre, and talking to him. And I'm like, he's laughing, cutting up. We're telling each other hunting stories, and I'm like, these people are nothing like what I thought they were. You know, for it's sure. So yeah. Crazy.
Well, it's
like,
funny, too, because all the DeQuistos, if you meet anyone in their family, you think, like, man, that's a they're a tough look.
Oh, yeah.
Which is it's a good look, I think. Right. It is for business and, like, in person. It's a tough look. But, like, they're so awesome. They're so cool. Yep.
Like, and totally willing to, like, help anytime they can. Yeah. You know, Cody will... He'll straight up tell you, like, his hunting strategies, like, what he did right, what he did wrong, and that kind of stuff. And so we had been talking a little bit, and now I'm starting to learn more about XOP and the business behind that and kind of what the DeQuisto involvement is on that.
Yeah, the whole story, episode 300, tune in.
And I encourage people, please listen to the whole story, because I guarantee you 95% of the hunting community has the story wrong.
Oh yeah.
For sure.
Maybe higher than 95%.
I had it wrong. Till we met Cody.
Well, if you don't know, you don't know. And we covered most of that on episode 300. Did you listen to that show?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think it's fair to say we covered the majority of it?
Yeah. Yep. And it's very clear, and you guys did a good job of, like, the key points and chronologically, you know, how it all happened and went together and where it's at now. And so Cody was like, "Hey, dude, I want to talk to you about, you know, this Lone Wolf custom gear." I'm like, "Yeah, what's that?" And he's like, "Ah, we got this new stand coming out. But I know you're very loyal to Lone Wolf." It goes back to, I knew him. He knew me. He actually knew a whole lot more about me than what I thought he did.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "Oh, dude, I know exactly who you are. I know the brand you work with. I've seen you at the shows. I know who, you know." He's like, "And you work with a lot of
That's
top quality brands."
That's why when you look at you, like, oh, he wants to kick my ass, but he knows.
He's a true assassin.
He goes, "I know exactly who that guy is.
That's how assassins operate. Assassins don't operate on luck.
Study your target.
You need to study.
That's right.
Cody's We're breaking an assassin, it down like this. Bro. I was like, Cody was in the industry and knew another dude that was in the industry.
Right. It was really
I'm getting a props. The guy hates my guts. I'm glad you guys are all on a good.
Steve plays it off like Cody does not hate you.
Let's clear Cody's good shit.
But it's funny to. We'll just play it off that Cody hates you, even though he doesn't.
Just to keep it. Yeah.
Because Cody is like the complete opposite of the spectrum of
guy's fit. I got a family that loves him, and a very successful company. And I just sit at home with my dog and cry while my turtle watches me, too. It's a complete opposite.
Yep.
But it is. Cody got to figure it out, man.
Well, and
I'm jealous.
He had approached me and said, "Hey," he said, I'd like to do something with you with Lone Wolf Custom Gear, but I know your relationship with Lone Wolf Portable Tree Stands. I've been with Lone Wolf Portable Tree Stands, or was with Lone Wolf Portable Tree Stands, since 2013.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to their website, I haven't been there in the last couple of months, but as of 2 months ago, 90% of their photos on their website is either a picture I took or a picture of me.
Right. Which is cool for
which
you.
Which is all of their background imagery and all that stuff. And so this year at ATA, we're talking. He bumps into me and we're talking a little bit. And he's like, "Yeah, I know you got that loyalty to Lone Wolf, but if there's something ever down the road, like, I'd love to work with you." And I'll be honest, I don't think of myself as anybody important. So on the inside, I'm like, dude, yeah. Cody DeQuisto wants to work with me. Like, that's right. Rad.
Yeah, that makes two of us, bro.
Yeah. I'm like,
he wanted to work with me and Eric, not you, Steve.
thanks, Steve. So I'm like, that's pretty cool. He wants to work with me. Like, that's neat. And so then I go and I start talking to Lone Wolf about this year. I'm like, "Hey, guys, going to keep the price the same. You know, we're going to do this. You know, this is what we're doing. Yeah. But now the platform has grown. We're reaching more people for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to go a different direction."
Hmm.
What? I've never lost a sponsor, a marketing partner before. And I'm like, really? Okay. So I'm like,
Big gulp. See you later.
Yeah.
Damn, you just got broken up with, bro.
Yeah, that's a weird thing because
I just got dumped.
I'm worth more and you're going to drop me?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
And I felt, and I was mad because, like, a lot of the Sitka ambassadors are using Lone Wolf because I got them set up to work with Lone Wolf.
Right.
There's a lot of Sitka promotion that
you've built this like foundation of your people.
Yep. And that's something that it's hard to explain to companies that I work with, is like, I think of myself as like a master co-brander.
Yeah.
You know, integrate,
which is huge. There's so much value in that because it's money.
Yes.
Essentially at a basic
point
of money.
It makes sense, you know, for brand like brands to align with each other. And a lot of companies say, you know, "Oh, no, we're going to do this on our own." No, do it together. You reach, you tap into each other's audience.
It's better, yeah.
And so I'll be honest, like, I was kind of hurt. I'm like, for real? Like, what a bunch of, seriously, it's like a huge letdown.
Yeah.
So I called Cody. I said, "Hey, man, I want to work with you." I still did not know at that point exactly all the details of how Lone Wolf, Portable Tree Stance, XOP, and how that was all going to work.
Yeah.
And I said, but I have one question for you. I have to know 100%. I need to see behind the Wizard of Oz curtain. I need to know how this all worked. Yeah. So he laid it all out for me, and I went, oh.
It makes sense.
Yeah, this makes sense. And then I thought, okay, I can do this because I'm not breaking loyalty.
Right.
I got dumped, but what I would say is I've stuck with the DeQuistos.
The OGs,
I got dumped, but I'm doing her sister, bro.
I'm like, I started out using Andre's original patent, and so XOP is the show sponsor for Arrowwild TV, and then me as an individual, I work with Lone Wolf Custom Gear. So I'm still utilizing and using and sticking true to Andre and Cody's patents.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I've been loyal to. And, you know, I used this analogy the other day, and actually I was telling Cody my analogy for navigating through the hunting industry. And he's like, bro, that's actually a really good analogy. If you're on the interstate, you got your vehicle set at cruise control, you're doing 75, whatever, and you don't want to have to tap the brakes, then you got to reset your cruise control, right?
Yeah.
So you're always looking ahead, the lane, and I got a slow car in my lane. Well, I'm going to get into the right lane, and then once I clear them, I'll move back into the left lane or whatever, and I never have to take my foot off the brake.
By the way, that's illegal.
Yeah.
I just want to throw it out there. That is an illegal move, and you as a cop?
Of all people should know that.
Especially you as a narc. Cop, right. You the least cool guy at the party. It's like, hey, who's got some cocaine, bros? I got this dude's a fucking cop, but yeah, let's go hit an eight ball off the urinal.
Yeah. Steve's trying to throw her way off the rails here, right. So way I apologize on his behalf. Well, so,
but yes,
he just full blown ignored you and went back. That
yeah, I'm just
this.
Like, I'm yeah. like,
that's well, a good of a copy. Hey, is.
You're getting used to us. Good job, man. Good job.
Well, I have this, like I said, and I really do like this analogy, and it's not like a thing where I'm patting myself on the back. I just think it's a good analogy for people to look at this and it to notice what other people are doing, you know, and you can apply this to other things in your life too, not just navigating through the hunting industry. But I have a goal. I'm always looking, you know, in front of me down the road. I'm not detouring and taking a different road. I'm on the highway, and that highway is taking me to the destination that I want to go to.
And you're set on cruise
control. I'm on cruise control. Yep. I'm not speeding and trying to take any shortcuts and pass a bunch of people unnecessarily or rudely.
Yeah.
But I've got it set on cruise control, but I'm never going to put my foot on the brake. So if I have to get into the right lane or the left lane and go around something, I went around Lone Wolf Portable Tree Stands. I'm back on that same road again, and I'm cruising along.
Ooh, right. I love
back
that.
On the same path.
So
if you make a dumb comment or analogy, I'm going to slap the fuck out of you.
This is not a bet. This is not.
I'm over it. I'm over it for this episode.
This is not.
Pull your shirt. Wait, Kurt, take your headphones off, because it's going to happen.
I'll pull the headphones off. I'm curious. So now, after you get this phone call, you know, obviously.
He called Cody, by the way.
Leading up to the history.
Yep.
Kurt, raise your hand. Raise your hand, because it's going to happen.
Now, you're on a new life path, and you're like, oh, shit, I've been dropped by a sponsor. Now you're looking at your kids.
Yep.
Your wife, and you're like, I've got to figure out what I'm going to do. So obviously that conversation is not the best conversation, but
yep.
Where's your mindset at when you're like, dude, I have to make a decision here.
Mm-hmm.
So you call Cody. Well, like, where is your mindset
he
at?
He already explained it. He was with the OGs the whole time.
But
so
he
called
OGs
Cody and said,
yeah.
I want to work with you. He already went over this.
When I called Cody, I said, hey, I told him straight up. I said,
yeah.
I kind of stalled on you and said, appreciate it. I said, but something has changed. Lone Wolf dropped me. And I said, I want to know more about, and that's why I said, I need to know the background of the business. Can I get behind it? Do I see the loyalty, integrity? Yeah. If you guys like undermined something or took some shortcuts or screwed somebody over, that's not my bag. I don't want my name attached to that.
And that's pretty cool of you to call him directly and just be like, hey, give me the rundown.
I need to know the rundown.
Give me the deets.
And you know, that's how I've done every company that I've worked with. Like, I want to know the story. I want to know their direction. And once he told me what was up, and I'm like, oh, one, I can respect that. Yeah. Two, that's business savvy as hell.
Best business plan.
It's unbelievable how smart that was. And I have a lot of respect for that. And So I'm like, okay, that's a brand I can get behind, not just because the product's awesome, but because you guys are smart, and I like, I want to do business with that, and that's how I want to go forward.
Yeah.
And I mean, who doesn't like extremely lightweight tree stand, you know, and that innovation, right? So we hooked up, and he didn't ask me anything like, what is Lone Wolf? What's your Lone Wolf deal? He made an offer, and I jumped on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. Like, and I told him, we were joking. I said, you know, sometimes people have like ulterior motives to things, right? I'm like, I have one with Lone Wolf Custom Gear. And he's like, really? And like, you're going to tell me that? I'm like, yep. My motive is I'm going to learn more about hunting from you. And I said, so motive. That's
a fact.
Yep. And he's like, really? And I went, yep, that's my ulterior motive.
That's a good motive
to learn more.
Yeah,
and that just shows that I wanted it right up front to show him exactly how much I'm setting my ego to the side, and I'm admitting that he's a better hunter than I am. Mm-hmm. And I want to be a better hunter. So there's always something to learn. I can learn from all of you guys too. There's something you can learn from everybody.
Yeah.
And it's it's no bullshit.
Yeah. I'm like, I want to know. Yeah.
Well, tying back in like with the DeQuissos, like I don't know Andre as well. I know I ate dinner at his house like a couple months ago, which was crazy. Like, we did a one of the video shoots with Lone Wolf Custom Gear. Like, and to see myself in the video shoot, like with Cody, like I have a Lone Wolf Custom Gear hoodie on. Cody has a Working Class Bow Hunter podcast hoodie on. Like, to see that, I'm like, it's kind of like, I'm like, holy shit, look at this.
Uh-huh.
But I don't really realize like holy shit until my wife is like, Kurt.
Holy shit.
You have hunted out of a Lone Wolf stand your entire life. Like, we bought them from the Illinois show when I was like 14, 15.
That's awesome.
The Alpha 2s. Like, I was probably talking to Cody, but don't remember.
Right.
And I've killed all my biggest bucks out of that stand. Uh-huh. And to be like, Kurt, you're in one of the video promos for this Lone Wolf Custom Gear stand.
That's cool.
And when she says it, I'm like, that's fucking mind-blowing. Like, it's a dream come true, right?
Yeah.
And me and Cody have so much in common being BMX kid, he's a skateboard kid. We're both tattooed.
Yeah.
Gauges in the ears for the hunting industry is strange.
Uh-huh.
And he only lives an hour away from me. Like, I'm like, how have I not known you? And we just got along so well, so it's cool. And I'm like, kind of trying to like pinch myself, like be a sponge. Like, when he talks about hunting, shut the fuck up and listen to him. Like, I tell Steve, shut the fuck up when guys like that talk and take notes, dude, because you'll learn so much from guys like Cody and Andre and just the OGs of mobile hunting. They wrote the book on what this is. And that's how I could probably, you know, I can confidently say 90% of the big bucks that are killed and patterned are because of the DeQuistos platform.
Sure.
You know?
I mean, they wrote the book on it. You know, Andre wrote the book on it. I mean, he did it for years and years and years before it was a thing. And what I find funny too is all of those years. And how come now, all of a sudden, in the last 2-3 years, did it start becoming super popular? Is it social media? Is that one of the good things that social media did? Is it has shed more light on some of those things?
Theory is the guys that have known about it, it has worked for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
they just didn't tell anybody.
And they've stuck with it.
Well, and I think social media has brought what the guys that knew how it worked. Mm-hmm. They brought that to for everyone else because of social media.
Yep.
So now you got new guys doing the public land thing, and that's awesome. The public land, the private land thing, doing the hang and bang, hang and hunt, whatever you want to call it, the run and gun, whatever. And there's guys that it's easier to grasp onto and learn quicker. So there's new people that have only been hunting a year, 2-3 years that are doing this hunting that – guys that took – in the day before Facebook was big, before Instagram was big, it took them 10, 12 years to grasp onto that theory. Right. And I think people kind of don't have a grasp on who is the OG of that type of hunting and show the respects of where that roots came from.
Well, I mean –
and why it makes sense.
And why it makes sense.
And why it makes sense.
Sure. And I know – you know, I talk to a lot of guys too that are a lot younger than me, half my age. And they're like, yeah, dude, I'm going to get this Lone Wolf portable tree stand. Dude, they invented mobile hunting. And I'm like, oh, yeah, they're 20. And if they just got into hunting, they don't have a clue who Andre is.
Right. Yeah. They have no idea.
Like, I'm good friends with, you know, like Tim Sylvia. And he lives down the road from me. Yeah. And people that are younger than me, you know, a lot of people are like, I've heard of like George St. Pierre, but I've never heard of Tim Sylvia.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Did Chuck Liddell knock him out?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right, right. So it's kind of one of those things. Like, you know, there's an age thing to it. And
it's the biggest thing probably, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I wish I could have met Andre back in the heyday, you know,
dude. Yeah.
And that would have been neat. But, you know, and seeing the way he built that, I mean, that was essentially kind of started as like a direct to consumer business because he was selling at trade shows before Amazon, before, you know, websites were a thing.
Like since 84, he's owned the brand.
Yep.
He is the OG.
Yeah, I mean, he is kind of the OG. Well,
isn't it cool when, like, you talk to Andre? He is intimidating. They have that look, and
he has that look like, I don't want to talk to you. I don't. Yeah. I don't give a fuck.
It's kind of like a confident look.
You go and talk to me. He's a nice dude around.
Kurt, what was more intimidating, asking Sam's father for his daughter's hand in marriage, or talking to Andre for the first time?
Andre, I respect him so much, and I kind of like idolize him as like this. I hate to say like mythical being, but like. You got to understand, like, how I grew up and, like, look at this. Like, he's Andre DeQuisto, you know? Like, and people that are listening, I might have my hands up, like, there he is. And I went to, when I was over at their farm and we ate dinner and stuff, like, at first, I didn't, like, shake his hand. Like, I was, like, shy and timid. He's like, hey, man, how you doing? I'm like, oh my God, I talked to you at the show. Hey, good to see you. Right. Then I like kind of opened up. I'm like
you felt like you should take your hat off at dinner and like do all this proper shit.
I just wanted to like bow my hat, like, after you, sir. Like, I'll follow you in. But he was just like so down home and really cool and like making jokes with me.
But I feel the same way.
You went to his house and you cooked his dinner. You know?
I wish I should. I should have done that, yes. I'm like, what do you need? You know,
you want a
refill of water, Mr. Andre DeQuisto? Yeah.
From here on house, I got you.
Like, easy, kid. You don't have to say my full name.
Right.
But I just respect him.
And, yeah. And no, I respect what he's done from the industry standpoint. And he gets a little extra respect from me having designed products and still designing products.
The best.
You know, right now I'm designing some products with Mystery Ranch packs and... that's a ton of fun. So working with different materials, normally it's been casting type stuff, which, again, the OG Lone Wolf tree stand cast aluminum. Mm-hmm. The Wicked Tree Gear saws were cast aluminum handles, and that's where a lot of that came from. And
that's super cool.
So it's funny how it all came full circle with being in business with Todd. And Todd, Andre was a mentor to Todd. And then hearing these mythical stories, never met the man. And then now going out to dinner, and now I'm working directly with them and doing photography and videos and stuff. And you know, there's not a lot of people that are working with Lone Wolf Custom on the stand side. I mean, I think you and I are two of three, right?
Yeah, like the podcast, you and I don't know who else.
Right. So, it makes me feel good about making those right connections. And it's a small industry, so... You know, you get a bad name and you screw over a company and you don't meet your obligations, like, you get found out quick, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So I
like that. You have to be about it. You have to be right or die, especially with, like, a company like Lone Wolf Custom Gear. Like, all of us we're right or die for something like that. It's those opportunities aren't often. And it's something I can believe in because it's responsible for almost every deer on my wall right now.
Yep.
You know, so it's like the proof is there.
Well, one of the funny stories I told Andre one of the first times that we like really, really talked, when I got my first Lone Wolf tree stand, fortunately I was smart enough to go and try to do a hang in my backyard before I took it out, like real deal. And it took me like 45 minutes to hang the first set, you know, four sticks in a stand. And I'm like, this is stupid. You know, like, I'll never be able to do this. And I tore it down. I'm like, all right, let's try it again. 20 minutes.
Yep.
Tore it down, tried it again, 15 minutes. You know, and then it's 10, and then it's 8, and then it's 7. And I'm like, this is awesome. Because Kentucky was ladder stand, rifle hunting. That's all we did. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nobody I knew. And you know, a funny story, I actually hunted. Sitka sent me to an outfitter in Illinois last year. And I won't name the outfitter or name the guide, but I pulled up, and I had a Lone Wolf with me. And he's like, what is that? I'm like, Lone Wolf tree stand. And he goes, are they new? I'm like, no. He's like, where are they out of?
Ooh.
20 miles down the road.
Well, that's a tough one, man.
Yeah, and I'm like.
Yeah, man, I'm a guy myself.
Yeah,
is that like, cool?
I think I'll
do my own thing.
Shows him, he's like, hey, here's the mineral sites that you can go ahead and head to. don't tell nobody.
We got River's Edge ladder stands at each one, so make yourself a home.
Dude, come on.
I was like, I'm just going to grab my
my dad killed most of his. He killed a lot of deer out of River's Edge Climber. I get it. I'm not knocking. I'm just saying.
And in all fairness, which isn't that a funny thing, like, in today's age, like, anytime you say something, you almost have to be like, but I don't have anything against other tree stand companies. Right. You can kill
especially
a deer.
Especially in the hunting industry.
Oh, my
people
God.
People are, they'll bite you for saying one thing. If you like fixed, you like expandables. Yeah. It's like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, you knock one thing on a bow, it's like, oh, dude, you're straight up. Like, if you knock one thing on a PSE, it's like, man, I don't
it's
really
conversation,
like,
man.
It's
conversation.
It's a whole, like, you hate the company.
It's just
like,
conversation.
Dude, yeah.
But it's let's nothing. Segue, because of the, funny enough, like, we're sitting here having this fairly long podcast.
Yeah.
And you're here at my house in our in the Working Class Bowhunter studio. Yep. We're all getting along. Like, we got along from the first time we met.
Yeah.
But we met because of the DeQuistos.
Correct.
Yes.
Right.
So it's cool how that tied in.
Well, and how I ended up being at that Wisconsin show was February. Shoot, I'm trying to think of the exact date. I've got it written on my calendar at home.
February 19th at 6:19 p.m.
Well, just that's right.
That's pretty. That's almost scary close because I woke up that morning. My phone had been ringing all night long, and I'm like, "What the hell is going on?" You know, this is more than telemarketers, and this is more than people wanting to get sponsored by Wicked. So I answered the phone. I looked, and I had all these voicemails, and people were like, "Hey, dude, what's up with Todd? What's up with Todd? What's up with Todd? What's up with Todd?" Yeah. And it was people trying to get a hold of me, and it's when Todd had his ATV accident.
Yep.
And I'm like, "Oh my God!" Now, in full also disclosure, we had a big blow up, but at Harrisburg this year, we bumped into each other in the hallway, and I just said, "Hey, dude, enough's enough. Burying the hatchet.
Yep.
You and I were best friends, business partners for a lot of years. I know that we said a lot of things we didn't mean.
Let bygones be gone."
And I said, "I'm done. I'm done carrying this around." At the end of the day, it was, you know, on the surface, it looked like we hated each other.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, to Todd and I, we were brothers.
Yeah.
And we were fighting like brothers. We still loved each other. Oh, you know what I mean? We just were really mad at each other because we were both so headstrong, passionate about what we were doing, you know? And so we buried the hatchet, and I know it meant a lot to him because he told mutual friends of ours, like, "Hey, dude, Todd called me immediately. You have no idea what that meant to him that you guys buried the hatchet." And I'm like, "Oh, my God, you have no idea what it meant to me."
Yeah.
It's a relief.
So right after Harrisburg is when he gets in that ATV accident, and he's hospitalized. Now, you know, being a cop for all those years, I've been in the ERs. I've seen the bad accidents, and I'm like, I already know. When I start hearing about the damage that was done and you know, what he was up against, I'm like, damn it. You know what I mean? Like, I know the way this story ends. But I'm still praying that everything has a miracle, right? And then a couple of days goes by, phone rings. I get a call from the owners of Tecumseh Holdings. And they're like, "Hey, bro, how's it going?" My God, just – I've kind of compartmentalized this thing with Todd. It hasn't hit me. I'm just – God, I feel sick to my stomach about it. But I'm very, you know, grateful that we – mended fences.
Yeah.
And they're like, "Well, hey, that last paycheck you got 5 days ago, that's the last paycheck you're getting." I'm like, "Excuse me?" Like,
at the same time?
Yeah. I'm like, same week, two days later. And I'm like, "Am I being fired?" And they're like, "Oh, shit, no, you're not being fired. Like, dude, you did a phenomenal job for us. We're having some financial struggles, and we're going to temporarily shut the company down to avoid real financial problems. So we're laying everybody off."
Holy shit.
I'm like, "I'm your marketing guy. I'm your product designer. I run your websites. I do your brochures. I do your photography."
Yeah, if you're out there, it's trouble.
I'm like, oh, shit. There is no rebounding, you know? So now I'm dealing with the emotions of a company that I helped build blood, sweat, and tears is now hemorrhaging, and who knows what the future is going to be. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, this is the worst week ever.
Right.
3 days later, I get a phone call. Todd died.
Holy shit.
And I'm like, fuck me. You know what I mean? I'm like, this is ultimately the worst day. I'm like, and it finally did hit me about 2 months ago, sitting at the house in my office and just broke down. Finally, you know,
right.
But it was just built up and built
up. Were
you
waiting for that? Were you wondering why?
I was, because I'm like, I know I'm not a heartless bastard. Like, why? But it was from the cop training. You know, you see so much bad stuff, you just compartmentalize it. Unfortunately, that's why
hold it all in.
Yep. And that's why I always say everybody has a cup, and when the cup runneth over, then you get military law enforcement suicides. I mean, it's a fact that law enforcement is number one career in divorces and suicides. So you're trained, you can't deal with it. You just compartmentalize it. And I think eventually you have to let that cup drain out, so to speak.
Let it all go.
Yeah.
And it finally hit me, and I broke down, and I was thankful because I'm like, oh, I actually do have a heart. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it was just the way I was built and the way I'm designed. And
yeah.
I finally dealt with it, and it was good, and I'm glad, that I was able to deal with it. Like I said, forever glad that him and I were able to patch things
yeah,
up.
Yeah, man, for sure.
Then I started Johnny Utah Creative, and I'm like, I got to do something, right? You know, and every service that I offered Techamani Holdings, I now offer to the public. And, doing some design work, with a pack company in Montana, and I work with Old Barn, a tannery taxidermy business.
Yeah, our buddy Julian Loker.
Yep.
He's
I see him all the time.
I got a mount from Julian in the living room
so
right now.
So anytime
you
see
his, my meal, dear.
Yeah. Well, if you see his picture on the Old Barn, I took it. So I do all their photos and stuff in-house and do a lot of marketing stuff for them. And, I've got some photo retainer clients and then, Arrowwild TV. So there's a couple different, revenue streams, but it's all based in the outdoor industry, whether it's marketing, photography, product design, or just simple consulting.
Which is awesome.
That's very cool, man. Well, good for you, dude. That's
awesome.
It's a cool – I can't imagine having – like the three calls in a week.
Yeah.
Like 5 days?
It was eight days total. Yeah.
Yeah, jeez. Dude. It's insane.
Yeah.
It's crazy how the timing of things worked out. If you bury the hatchet right there, imagine if you hadn't
Holy
have done
crap.
That.
That's what my wife said. So I told my wife, I didn't tell her the details about the accident, but I told her all the details then after he passed. And she's like, oh, my God. And then her eyes got real big. And I'm like, what? And she goes, what if you guys had not patched things up in Harrisburg?
Right.
And I'm like, oh, my God. You know what I mean? I'm like, and it just, I thought about it. And I'm like, you know what? Life is too short.
Way too short.
Yeah.
To hold those kind of grudges, and I'm passionate and I'm stubborn, but relationships are so much more important to me now. Every day they become more and more important, And again, those relationships and doing what you say you're going to do and being loyal to those companies that you work with is the reason why I have a job.
Mm-hmm,
and it's the reason why 4 months after losing, I'll tell everybody, it was a 6-figure job. And, 4 months after losing that job, I'm not making 6 figures, but I'm paying the bills. You know what I mean? And it was because of those friendships and those relationships and the loyalty and stuff like
it
that.
It boils down to the beginning of the show. Respect is a lot. Yep. I mean, not all. It does boil down most times to that because that's why you were in the positions and you earned it, though. You earned your respect and earned your.
Well, now, I can say that between all three of us right here, me, Kurt, and Steve, that we've all had our tiffs. We've all done it.
We're like,
you know what? Fuck it, life's way too short.
Well, it's normal human interaction, too.
It is, too.
Me and Eric might hate each other for 5 days straight, and then we're like, hey, dude, we're idiots. I'm like,
we're
idiots. And then we hate Steve all the time.
Yeah, but, no, that's just a different thing.
Steve just hated all the time.
We joke with Steve, but it's that's our dynamic, uh-huh. Steve knows I don't actually hate him
time. I actually hate him.
I hate you 70% of the time. And that's just how we work, uh-huh.
Dude, here's a beautiful thing. If it wasn't for Eric and Kurt, and this is Steve getting serious, you will not hear a lot of this.
Yep. Oh, boy.
My life would not be where it's at right now. I have that drive and desire just to get these fucks off my back, right? You know what I mean?
What are you going
to
do?
But my life is very good right now because I've positioned myself with individuals that have greater goals rather than just oh, man, fuck it. Let's see what happens. Let's just try this and see what happens. No, it's I've got Eric, Kurt, and these guys are dude, we need to push to make results happen.
Sure.
You need to push to have results rather than results just happen.
Yep.
So I never really took that in until the past year or so, and it's really paid off, man. And I'm really excited to see what it does in the deer hunting woods because I'm like, if I got these guys pushing me and now I've got that fire under my ass, I'm like, I know how it feels, how good it feels to get shit done. And I can send them photo proof
got my bow set up. This is your year for a Pope and Young, Steve.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm doing.
Let's root for Steve for a Pope and Young.
That's where I'm at.
You guys doing shirts?
Nobody.
We should.
Oh, dude, if I do a shirt, it's I survived 300. Let's see, it was 312. Let's see how many weeks. It'd be like, I survived 400 episodes, and I finally heard Steve hit a 125 buck, and all I got was his lousy
All I got was his lousy
shirt.
T-shirt.
That's what we're going to make.
But he knows if it doesn't happen, we're literally going to light a fire underneath his ass.
Oh, yeah.
You have to.
Literally.
Firecrackers.
The fire's been lit, dude. The fire's been lit, embered down. I put new logs on it and fired it back up. I even got one of those synthetic logs from Farm and Fleet that just lights on its own.
We even reserved the channel.
Was the fire lit like 4 years ago?
Yeah, I think like February 26th. All right,
hey, shut up. We're not worried about the past. We're worried about the yeah. future, okay, okay, the okay. present, and the okay. future. But
let's do this. We've had a long haul of an episode.
Yeah. Oh shit! This is badass. Great episode.
What have we not hit that we should hit? Or you think
on Johnny Utah?
Let's see.
How much can you bench press, bro?
Right now 20
way more than I can.
Hit him with some rapid fire.
Are you wanting to hit with rapid fire?
I'm unprepared. All right, I will. Let me grab.
All right, hey, first question, rapid fire. Who's your favorite pro wrestler of all time?
Jake the Snake.
Jake the Snake Roberts.
Yes.
You're a thinking school, motherfucker, dude. Aren't you?
Old school, man. Saw him in Rupp Arena in Lexington when I was a kid. My dad took me there. My dad and I didn't have the best relationship growing up. I have a big tattoo across my back. It's a 63 Impala Super Sport. And that was the first thing that my dad and I ever did together. And I was a teenager. I mean, you know, like the typical mom took me to all the track practices. She took me to all the soccer practices.
Yeah.
Dad was working. Mm-hmm. And you know, at the time, I hated him for it. But now as a parent, I look back on it and I say, he could have been doing something worse. I mean, he was just working. He was just trying to provide for us. So,
yeah.
You know, I respect that. But I have a tattoo on my back to kind of that first thing that my dad and I did together. But he took me to go to Rupp Arena to watch wrestling. And I remember Jake the Snake. And I was like, that guy's awesome.
Dude, you got a snake? I
just wanted you to say the Bushwhackers because you liked how they came out. You didn't have to go that far. Just kidding.
Like I said, that's awesome. Like I said before, your old man, my old man, to a T. I have a Cutlass symbol. Let's
bring
on
him
my
in.
Side because we built a 69 Cutlass together.
That's so that cool.
Yep. That's awesome. That's cool. Like I did your whole back.
It's pretty much.
This is your whole back. Yes.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Do you pull the tape out?
Yeah.
So it's got a hell of a long
it's a whole
shoulder
front
blades.
End. And if anybody's you know an Impala guy, like 63, like the grill.
Oh,
I remember
yeah.
my tattoo guy. He takes a break and I'm like, "What do you got?" And he's like, "I'm only a quarter of the way through the holes in the grill." And he's like, "You are such a dick right now." He's literally just
detailing them out.
Hole in the grill.
Yeah, I have an whole Oldsmobile symbol down my side
just because of it.
That's yep. awesome, man.
That's too rad.
Okay, let me ask you this question before we close her out. Yep. So I appreciate you coming to the studio, man, making it to where we're in studio podcasting. Yep. Will you come back?
Hell yeah, dude. Like tomorrow?
Yeah, every dude, episode.
This is awesome. I'm having a blast. It's refreshing. Like I said, I've done a lot of podcasts, but I don't feel like I've ever got to like tell the like a full story and to talk to people and tell it real. And I'm not saying I've ever told a fake. I'm just saying to the add-ons, like how it got to where it is and what it is that I think makes up me and my background. And you know, I'm a big whitetail guy, but my only Boone and Crockett's actually an antelope.
The cover art to this episode.
Yeah. Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We haven't even talked about it. We got another like 3 hours to go.
Are we going to record part two right now? Or?
Yeah.
I think that it's just a good excuse to have you back.
Dude, I'm all about it. Yeah.
So
I'm all about
it. No, I really appreciate you coming
thank
in.
Thank you so much.
Hey, maybe next time, because Cody was like, hey, I might just come sit in.
Uh-huh.
We'll do a part two. We'll talk about Boone and Crockett Antelope. We should have talked about the Boone and Crockett Antelope if it's the cover art, but we didn't.
Well, I mean,
let's tell the story.
Okay, real fast.
Fuck no, you don't gotta
be
fast.
No, wait. That gets people coming back.
What is the cover art of the episode?
What do you know about the cover art? I don't know. I mean, it's not a crazy long story.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah,
let's just kill it.
We can do whatever we want.
So 2016, I hooked up with a couple buddies from Sitka that we were gonna go do something different we haven't done before, and somebody said, "Let's go chase antelope." Like that's a semi-affordable hunt, right? It's not like going out and getting an elk tag or something. So we go out to Montana, and I have I don't know anything about it. I'm thinking I'm a decent shot with a bow. It can't be much different than whitetail hunting. This is simple.
You good, Cameron? What are you guys doing? Sorry to interrupt your story. I got my whole crew over here looking.
No,
at
I was just
camera.
Checking on camera.
We're doing sign language.
I was checking on the camera.
Right,
guy.
Sorry, John.
Make sure he didn't
okay, dead. So we go do public land hunt with bows, you know, in Montana. And we go, like, I think it was the second week of their season, maybe third week of the season. And long story short, we get our ass kicked for 5 days. Rain, wind, you know, it's horrible. Every stalk I went on, I spooked them. Mm-hmm. I'm still waiting for my littering ticket from the state of Montana to come in for all the arrows that I left out there that I never found.
Carbon fragments.
Oh, my gosh. It was awful, you know? And I'm like, okay, now I know what I need to do. I need to work on long distance. And I need to work on stalking. So swallow ego, call my buddies, one of my buddies, Lyle, that lives out in Montana. I said, hey, dude, I need some coaching on antelope hunting. And he's like, okay, don't waste your time on low percentage stalks. Like, just keep driving. You know, I don't care if you only get 4 stalks in that day. Just make them high percentage stalks. Before you get out of your truck, make sure you've got an object to leapfrog behind. You know, say, like, from this can to, you know, that sage. And I'm like, okay. Because I was just going full bore. Like, I'll just charge right at them.
Fuck them, right?
Yeah, like, if I get within 90, like...
But you don't know any better. You've never done your life.
What's a Proghorn's eyesight distance? Was it like 3 miles or something they can see or something?
It's funny. They'll let you get to like 100, and they'll just stare at you. And it's like as soon as you break that like 100-yard, 90-yard mark.
So 99.8, you're screwed.
Gone. Yeah.
Yeah. You're screwed.
Gone. I mean, and it's, you know, they're 55 miles an hour. So 1 minute, they're a mile away.
Wild.
It's nuts.
That's even crazy to even think about.
And there's no like ramp up speed. It's now.
They're there.
Yeah, they're like the Subaru WR6 STI 0-60, you know, like gone.
I can relate to
that. We know about that, Kurt.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. So I went home dejected. I'm like, man, I just ate a tag. Like, I'm a piece of crap, you know? So it gave me one full year to research, learn, educate myself. And crisis rehearsal. I went back into like cop mode, you know. So when I'm in that position again, how am I going to react?
Mm-hmm.
Went out the very next year for redemption, and on the fifth day ended up shooting a goat, 72 yards.
Damn.
And on public land, and I was so jacked. I'm like, oh my gosh, I did it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a quick cape out, get the meat, because everybody says, you know, their hide slips, and you know, it is really, really good meat, but you need to get them caped out quick. So get back to Iowa. And I posted a couple of pictures, and I had some photo deliverables for some companies that I worked with on the project. And so I post a couple of images, and one of my buddies, Jeremy Myers, he lives in West Virginia.
Funny. I know a Jeremy Meyer from freaking South Dakota.
Oh, okay.
I'm going antelope hunting with this summer.
That's rad.
Not the same one?
No. Can't be. Yeah.
I was calling him Jeremy Mayer. It's M-A-I-R. Oh. M-A-I. I can't remember how he spells it.
So M-A-I-E-R?
Something like that.
He sends me a message. He sends me a message and he's like, hey, did you score that goat? I'm like, no, it's not a whitetail. I don't, you know what I mean?
I don't know how.
Yeah, I'm like, so he calls me like 2 days later. He's like, hey, did you score that goat yet? I'm like, dude, like, you're more obsessed with the score of this goat than I am. I don't care, you know, like, I shot a good, you know, antelope buck on public land with my bow.
Right.
Like, I've already won, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so he goes, like 2 days later, he calls me back and he goes, hey, bro, you going to score that goat ever? I'm like, fine. I was like, what do I start? I got an inside spread. And he's like, no, that's not even part of the score. Like, you just get, you know, you get
you're
like,
trying
your
to go
mass
all
measurements.
Whitetail.
Yeah. Right. You get your length and you get your cutters. And I'm like, why do you want me to score it? And he goes, dude, I've seen a lot of antelopes posted and that's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, screw it. You know, whatever. He emails me like the Boone and Crockett scoring sheet. So I'm like, okay, fine. I'm like, I'll call you back. So I measure it once, I write the number down. And then I measure it a second time, write the number down. Do it a third time. And I'm like kind of doing conservative. I'm not like stretching or anything crazy or going to the tips. And I come within like a quarter of an inch variance of all three numbers, you know? And so I call him and I give him the lowest number. I'm like, I'm 80 5/8. And he's like, you son of a bitch. And I'm like, what? And he's like, you're 5/8 of an inch over Boone and Crockett. He's like, you just killed your first Boone and Crockett animal and you did it with a bow on public land. And I'm like, yeah, but it wasn't a whitetail.
All right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Our mindset is wired different.
I'm so whitetail. But, you know, one thing I can say is, I trained myself to shoot longer distances before I went out there.
Yep. Yeah.
And there was tactics about that hunt that I have then applied to whitetail hunting and vice versa. You know, I tried to whitetail hunt them a little bit and I've tried to antelope hunt whitetails. So it makes me want to go out west and do different animals. Not because it's a cool thing nowadays and everybody's going out west and doing that. I like the adventure. I don't mind failure now. I'm 41 and I don't mind failing as long as I learn something from it and I got my ass kicked in a good way.
I'm glad that we took the extra mile and went that story because my plan is to go to South Dakota to do public land antelope with my buddies from Buckstorm Productions.
Yep. Dude, let's talk about it and maybe there's a few pointers I can you know, help you to kind of help with that crisis rehearsal. Because, like, if you kind of can – and if you can kind of game plan it out before it happens, like, that was so huge.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing, like, going to –
conversations will happen.
Going to Nebraska, like, mule deer hunting.
Yep.
It was all spot and stock.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Which I've never done in my life.
Nope, me neither.
Didn't know anything about it.
You can't do it here.
No.
Oh, you can't – certain situations, yeah, they're rare. Right. They're rare.
But the things I learned out there, I kind of took into the whitetail – woods here, you know, you kind of learn from each
makes
side
you a little
of the story.
Stealthier.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it does. I mean,
you can almost apply that spot and stalk approach to your entry exit into tree
you
stands.
You can for sure.
Yep,
absolutely.
There's a lot. That's a good tip.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. Yeah. That's how you should approach your stands. Think about it.
You should. Like a ninja.
You're sneaking in.
But you've never done the spot and stalk before, so it kind of throws a stick in the spokes. You know, you're like, I think I'm good at being sneaky and stealthy, but then you're like, I have no idea what the fuck I'm
doing.
Total
humble pie. When I went out there, I'm like, dude, I'm a ninja.
Right.
You know what I mean? I got this.
Dude. Like, no dude, idea.
You sit
no
in idea. The antelope's like, you sit in trees, motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, dude, we can see you. What are you doing? Dude? Yeah. We're watching. Like,
that's exactly how mule deer are, and all of a sudden they just hop away.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You're like, shit, they're fucking 10 miles away.
We're flatlanders. We got a lot to learn about
West.
Yeah.
And I got a whole lot of humble pie being served to me in the future.
Gosh.
Hey. Humble pie is what makes you go back and kill
make
blue
sure there's
crockets.
A scoop of vanilla ice cream on top of that.
Well,
though.
And you know, like, and that kind of started that whole thing of like wanting to chase different animals and stuff. And it kind of, like I said, you learn more to keep you fresh. This year in August, I'm going to Canada on my first black bear hunt.
I've never done that before.
So I'm really looking forward to that. And
I got to do that, man, soon. That's on my bucket list.
I'll be honest, there's one thing about it that I'm struggling with, and it's the bait.
I hear you.
It's
so thick up there. How else do you hunt them?
Right. I mean, that's how you centralize them. And
you could be like our boy Clinton Casper. Like 2-3 weeks ago, he was in Montana trying to spot and stalk. But he's like, dude, the success rate's like 5%.
Yeah.
Right.
Like it's almost impossible.
Right. I mean, it's like, you know, when in Rome. You know, I mean, that's what happens.
That's
what you do.
For sure.
Yeah. They bait and I thought about it like the baiting. Like what bothers me. This may sound really cheesy and corny. Mm-hmm. The thing, obviously the bait is an issue, but it's the aspect of the bait.
Like, I hear you.
When I go into the woods and I see beautiful trees and I see a forest floor and stuff like that, and you know, you see decaying leaves and you see moss and all that. Yep. That's what we love, right? That's what we love to see. How shitty is it when you see this big blue barrel in the middle of the woods? Because it looks like a dump site.
I hear you.
It does. It does.
Like,
it's human interaction.
So you didn't grow up in the public parks that I did. Because
Steve has no issue hunting bears over bait.
Oh, dude, I grew up in the city. I'm like, yeah, dude, shoot those fuckers, man.
Dude, you probably have so much in common with a big black bear.
Oh, probably, dude. I just eat trash. People universally hate me.
You like to live in a dumpster?
Yeah, I like to live in a dumpster. And then occasionally, like, some really cute girl's going to defend me, but then she's going to get attacked by me, and she's like, ah, kill them all. Yeah. It sucks, dude. The life of a black bear. I get it.
Well, and it's, I get it. You know, and the other part of, you know, going to places like that is, like, the fly fishing. Fishing is something I'm teaching myself to do this year.
That's cool.
Just next week, I head out to the Utah tax shoot with Prime, and then the guys from Prime and Jason Matzinger and Soholt and I, we're all getting together, and we're jumping on Sam's public land bus, and we're fly fishing through Idaho.
Oh, awesome.
Hitting all public waters, and then we're going to end up in Big Sky and doing the Big Sky tax shoot.
Bring some moose drool back with you, will you?
What's that?
Bring some moose drool back with you.
Okay.
From Big Sky
and when you say tax shoot, it's total archery challenge, right?
Yes. Okay. Yep, total archery challenge.
I want to do one. Get my ass handed to
me. I was up in Decorah last weekend, and they're big fly fishermen up there.
Uh-huh.
And okay. They have guides everywhere, and I'm like, I told my wife, I'm like, if we come up here again, I'm doing it. I'm buying a guide. I don't give a shit because I've never done fly fishing before.
That's awesome.
It's always been bass fishing, cat fishing.
And I know nothing about it. I mean, I've seen the movie A River Runs Through It, that's my education of fly fishing. Totally.
That's mine too.
And I called there's a fly fishing company, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of the company, but I called them, found them online. First one, you know, they must pay Google AdWords the most. So they came up top, and I called them and I said, "Hey, bro, I've seen the movie, A River Runs Through It, but I'm going to go do some fly fishing and I want to try it. It's something new." So I'm like, all I know is 10 and 2, and Brad Pitt really knows how to cast, you know, or do his thing.
And waiters in a vest. Right. That's all I know.
And no, dude, I remember I got laid off, so I'm just going in sandals and a shorts, you know. Right. Like, I can't afford waiters. So a real good friend of mine, Kobe, owns this Rise Fishing Company, and he built me a custom, you know, fly rod in a shop. And I'm like, that's cool. I'm like, I have a fly rod built from my friend.
You but know you don't know
what
how
I
mean? To
right.
use it.
I don't know how to use it, but you got to start somewhere, you know right. what I mean? So. Right. So he sent it to me and I'm taking it out for the first time. And, again, I mean, it's not a Me Too thing. I'm going on a fly fishing trip. I'm going to Canada. Awesome. Like, so I want to have the whole experience,
oh,
right?
For yeah. sure.
I mean, I want to catch some of these things. And
that's awesome, dude.
I'll probably suck at it. I'm actually pretty confident I'll suck
at it. Man, I hope so, dude.
Hey, go kill a Boone and Crockett black bear for us.
Do it.
We'll do it. I like it.
I feel like Crockett trout.
I feel like a part two is coming after you slay some shit.
We don't even call it part two. There's just more podcasts on the way.
This is the introduction. So this is just your introduction.
Like, we're on episode 300-something. This would be part 812, right?
There
you go.
All right.
Hell yeah.
Well, here it is. Episode 312. What I'm going to do, we're going to do a round table of something positive and how we're going to close it out, and we're going to start with Eric.
You're going to start with me?
All right, we'll start with Steve.
Shit.
My positive is that you came all the way down here and podcasted with us. I feel really inspired to go out there and do something great. Plus, you said you got inspired to fish off a, you know, movie, so I feel like I don't feel like such a piece of shit when I get inspired off a movie. Like, I watched The Green Mile, dude, and I'm like, dude, I'm inspired to help people.
There you go. Well,
never seen The Green Mile, have you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Wait, who hasn't seen
John Coffee?
Have you seen The Green Mile?
Yeah, Big John Coffee.
No.
Oh, my God. You never say, all right, dude, all right.
I've seen it a million times.
I slid that two out of three. All right, thank you.
Yeah,
I'm happy.
Something positive, a refreshing group of guys in the hunting industry. I'll be honest, the last couple of weeks I've been in this like kind of a funk where I'm like, oh, what is going on with the hunting industry? So it's refreshing to sit down with a group of guys. Right. That
thank you, man.
I'm keeping it real. So I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate good. You
is
saying
that. What you're saying?
Yep. And my big tip to leave everybody is everybody's got 24 hours a day. Make the most out of it.
Absolutely.
Yep.
My something positive would be set your goal and do whatever it takes to achieve it. So if it's that Pope and Young 125 flat even buck that you want, that classic 8-point that you see in Illinois, whether or not you think you should or should not shoot it, and that's what you want to do, you should shoot it. No matter what online says you should or should not do, or what you think you should or should not do because of online influence. That's my something positive.
I think my something positive is, Johnny, I want to thank you because I think your old man, my old man, was the same person.
Cut from the same cloth.
We're raised the same way, yeah. You know, thinking about, hey, how can you make this better? What can you do to better yourself? You know, work your ass off, do the same thing. So I just want to thank you to... It's kind of refreshing to see someone else in that same perspective.
Yeah, no doubt. I appreciate that.
Document it. Two cheap fucks just met each other. Right? Eric's the cheapest dude I know. He's always like... I'm like, dude, what kind of shoes are those? Go, $9 at Target.
Walmart, yo.
Oh, it's Walmart?
Walmart.
My wife makes fun of my, like, if I go to Walmart, she's like, hey, can you go to Walmart, pick up, you know, something. And it'll be, like, one of those monthly things, like, you got to pick up, like, a big pack of toilet paper or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then as I'm walking from the toilet paper aisle to the cashier's thing, I'm like, ooh, $4 cargo shirts. Hell, yeah.
$4 cargo shirts. Yeah. Dude, yep.
All
right.
I'm all
just,
about it.
We just did I not call that?
We just became
that.
Best friends.
I patterned these $2, dude. Yeah. These $2 are dead. I patterned you guys, and my dumbass did it. Eric's like, so, ooh,
plastic Velcro shoes. Mine.
Yeah. Bingo.
Have better tactics,
do you
guys.
Have
don't
those
get
in
caught
a size
up in
11?
The, yeah. Don't get caught up in the short. Sick.
Some walks.
Off-brand Crocs. They're mine.
They're
thank
walks.
You, Walmart.
They're walks.
That's how big bucks die, dude. They get old and they get cheap. That's how big bucks die.
That's
I'm
a perfect
convinced.
Way to close this podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening. You know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you.